right, all right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. Got DJ Khaled bringing us in, bringing you all in. Welcome. Another great show planned out for you. Marcus the Game Changer in the house. Got my man holding me down, Phil T. Sports PhD, also known as D. Newell. And he's going to hold me down for the next little bit of time while we're on the air over the next 2 hours. Here with you on a Tuesday night, 8:30 to 10:30, as always. And as we like to say, we are the cats chilling on the corner, chilling at that intersection between life, sports, entertainment, culture, where all that meets. We sitting there ready to show you around, ready to give you the directions, give you the lay of the land. And that's what you come here for. All right? So D-Wheels is going to be joining us at some point tonight. He'll get on when he can. If you'd like to get on, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844. We're going to dig into some real funny, crazy, interesting things that have happened since the last time we were with you all. Sports world has kind of been going bonkers over the last 2 weeks. And, you know, that makes for good radio, so we love that. Okay? We love that. But before we get into that, I want my man D. Newell, Sports PhD. Holler at the people. Let them know what's going on with you.
Hey, I'm coming in like Shapiro, Lil Luke. I'm going down. I'm taking everybody with me. Okay, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
Yeah, man, we're gonna get into that. We're gonna dig into that because that is a cluster hump if there was ever a cluster hump. You feel me? It's not looking good for the U, man. And I'm a U fan. Like I love the U. I love it. I love college football when the U is being the U and they're on top and they got their swagger, you know, in full effect and they're doing their thing. That is excellent to me. You know, I love to see the U on top. So it scares me a little bit that the U is going through these problems and looks like they may suffer some sanctions and some penalties. I just don't want to see that happen. But we're going to get into all that real quick as we jump into the funky editorial, as we always do about this time.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, right. Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. We're going to get into this real quick. Now, for the funky editorial, what we're going to focus on, this is going to be a college. This is going to be the co-ed college edition. You know, everybody's reporting to campus. You know, college is about to get in, you know, the first semester is about to go into full session. And so, you know, we want to just touch on some things that are going on in the world of college athletics. First thing we got to hit on is, man, I want to preface this before we get into it. Okay? Me and D. Newell, we're children of the 80s, early 90s. That was when we was coming up. And be that as it may, during that time, as a young black male, there was only, you had your home team that you rooted for, whatever your home college team was you rooted for. Phil T's from Michigan, so but Big Blue was big in his life. He probably rooted for the boys at East Lansing, you know. But that there was one team, that no matter what part of the country was from, you were from, you probably had a hat or a shirt, or maybe even one of them polyester starter coats. All right, and that was the Hoyas, okay? That was the Georgetown Hoyas. You know, the Georgetown Hoyas was that team. They was all black everything, as Jay says. You know what I'm saying? Black coach, full team, full of black cats. And everybody loved the Hoyas because of everything that they stood for, representing Chocolate City, holding it down for D.C. The Hoyas were that team. Fast forward to 2011. So, me and Phil T, we make a sabbatical every year.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
What's up, D-Wills? We're about to get into this G. I'm prefacing this G-Town issue real quick. We're going to get into that. So, just let me pontificate for a moment, all right?
Okay,
All right, so we fast forward to 2011. Now, me and Phil T, man, we've been best friends since college. And, you know, we have another friend of ours who we reunited with over this past year. We made a pact to every year we're going to hit a tournament site and watch some games. So this year we chose Chicago. We rolled up to Chicago, and guess who's playing? The Hoyas. And we go and see the Hoyas, man. And we go and see the Hoyas, and we know you. We all remember the Hoyas, you know, from Ewing to Mutombo and Mourning, you know, to David Wingate, Reggie Williams, Sleepy Floyd,
Michael,
you know, up to right, up to Iverson, Boubacar Al, Othella Harrington, Victor Pacey. We know the Hoya program, okay? We deep in the Hoya tradition, all right? So we get to watching, and the Hoyas are starting a white kid. No offense to white basketball players. This just never has happened. All right? So we're like, oh, okay, he's got to be on point. He just has no choice. There's really no other way you can cut it. If you start as a white kid for Georgetown, you better bring it. You know? So we watch it, and it was just a horrible display. They played VCU. VCU laid into them. At that moment, we knew VCU was going to – we all said that at that moment. VCU was going to beat a lot of people in that tournament, and they did. They were, you know, made a run to the Final Four. It was great. But at that moment, we realized that the Hoya program had changed. And that the fact that it had changed was cemented. It was cemented this past week as the Hoyas were – I really don't know how to put it, but they got their ass kicked. They got their ass kicked in China, okay? They went over there to China, and I don't know what was being said on the court. I don't know what was going on the court during the game. All I know is them Chinamen put in work.
Right.
They put in work, and... It's gonna be hard for the. All I'm gonna say is, it's gonna be hard for the Georgetown team to go to any Big East stadium. Not just some China jokes. So I want y'all to chime in, man. I just say what I need to say, man. I'm feeling bad as a Georgetown fan, man. I'm feeling real bad right now about the state of the program. You know, it's been one embarrassment after the other, and this is just not good.
Tell you what, the Chinamen, they did not buy into Hoya paranoia. They didn't.
They wasn't feeling it at all, man. If you haven't seen the clip, man, look up the clip of Georgetown in China brawling. And if you look closely, man, there's some intricate details. They were playing the Bay Yi Rockets, I think is the name of the team. Them cats on the Rockets, I think this is the Army team from China.
Right.
These cats are soldiers. As Kellen Winslow would say, they're soldiers. Right? They're effing soldiers. And so, you know, you got a bunch of college kids, and I'm sure they got the mouthing off, saying some things they didn't really like. Who knows if either team understood the other team, but body language says enough. And so one thing leads to another. And it becomes an all-out melee. And honestly, it looks like the Rockets was waiting on it. They was waiting on the fight. You know, it seemed like they was off the bench before the first punch was thrown.
Well, I'll jump in here. So there's a couple things. Someone's hitting me back and forth because this also is a team. They said they kind of consider them the bad boys of China. It sounds like this is a team that's been in a number of fights. That fight, probably because they're soldiers.
They got Anthony Mason on their team. Yeah, that's where you go. You're always fighting.
So they also have been in fights That's it. The bad boys of China. In terms of this is a team that's been in several fights. But part of it is, so I'm gonna unpack this because a year ago this year I was in China. So there's a couple dynamics for this team. When they're prepared to go over there, and I know in terms of these being college athletes representing the program, part of it's a mindset. So you've been told the whole time you're ambassadors. And, you know, Georgetown, even though they've had some shift in the demographics of their team, still come with a reputation. So I know school officials, I know Coach Thompson, everybody, when we were preparing our students to go over to China, I mean, it was important to get people ready for the culture shock of you feeling isolated when you're over there, because you have to get used to the fact that you're not going to see a lot of black folks, if any. Now, you run up on it, you know, in Beijing and Shanghai. Shanghai is a lot like New York City. Beijing is like Chicago, in a sense, in terms of city size and just feel, in a sense. So they, you know, they went over there with a lot of folks talking about you, ambassadors, and you doing a lot. And part of when I watched that fight, because there was a couple over in the corner, the one behind the basket where the kid was straight up beating him down. If you want to see this, all you got to do is go to realsportsguys.com. We got the video up. So if you hear this, just go to realsportsguys.com. You can play it. You can forward it to your friends. But there is a point where there's a cat that's really getting it in on a Georgetown player. I mean, straight this could have been at Rucker, the way he beating down on him. But you could tell the Georgetown players look a little hesitant, like, you know, like, if it was at Providence, I'm going after you because it ain't an issue. But it looked like you could tell there was a little hesitancy about, should I be doing this? Should I do this? Because they've been told the whole time up, you an ambassador. And I could see some hesitation in some of the players about how they should get after this. And so that's the dynamic that plays. I know when we were preparing, we were always saying, you an ambassador. You're trying to instill into your kids that you're there. You're representing not just yourself. You're representing university. You're representing the United States of America. So there's a whole bunch of – there's a mindset you go into in there that you are always reminded about. And so that's kind of a backdrop to that. And so I'm not discounting the fact that Chinese team got up on them. But also when I watched the video several times. I was just shaking my head a couple times. I saw a lot of hesitancy, where cats weren't quite sure. Like, if this was a game being played in D.C., they wouldn't hesitated. They would have known that they're supposed to be represented, but folks would have just been swinging freely. And also, when you're traveling, you really realize you are alone. It's just us. You have a sense that it's just you in a town. I remember getting caught up in the World Expo, getting lost from my group, and it was just a whole bunch of – everybody was exiting the building – or actually in the park, and it was like droves of people, and I had never felt so isolated in my life. I was like, where's my – like I would never find my group I could connect with. So it's a different feeling when you're in a surrounding like that. So I saw some of that hesitancy on some of the players that if, in some senses you would have got, like if they were in their element, they wouldn't have hesitated the way they did. And part of – you know how it is. If you get in the park, you get to fight. If you ever play hoop, everybody's been in their little scrap on a pickup court. If you hesitate a minute, you're done. If you had a split second, it like, why you hit me? Whatever it is, you backpedaling. And
right. Get your backpedal on.
You backpedaling on that. So,
but then you're going to start screaming, retreat!
I would add that piece as somebody who it was probably one of the best experiences I ever had, going to the top of the Great Wall. Those kids will never forget. Other than that fight, it's an incredible experience, but it is different.
If you they won't even forget that fight, man.
Yeah.
I say this. I say this all the time, man. Nothing galvanizes a team like a team fight. You get into a fight with another team, man. Y'all gonna be boys forever because y'all shared that experience. Even if you had a part, and you get into a fight with another dude, and you may not even know this cat, but if y'all get into a fight together, y'all got a bond.
A bond.
You know what I'm saying? Y'all got a bond at that point. Yeah, every time y'all see each other, hey, man, remember that time we was at the park and them cats tried to test us? Yeah. We held our own, you know. You always – so now every time they talk about this China trip, there's going to be that one dude that they look at like, you had to go there with him, didn't you?
Yeah, because the one cat behind the basket who really getting beat down on is cats throwing straight LRs on him. You know he getting ripped on the plane.
Everything. They throwing chairs at him. I mean,
and the one kid had the chair and his coach or somebody was in front of him like, he put it down. Because when he picked it up, he was like, I'm gonna throw it again. And the coach came in like, hold up. He was like, the kid put it down like, oh, you saved him. Because I was about to hit him over the head with this chair. It went WWF on him, or WWE these days. But, yeah, they said, everything that's in the arena is fair. And then the fans started throwing things, throwing bottles and everything else. And when you, when it's just you, it ain't. It's not like just being in a game at Providence or Syracuse. It's like when you're in that situation, I can see those kids feeling like, man, it's us against a billion people. That's how you feel, like
because it was.
Because if we get out of this arena, we might have to fight to our hotel room. We're going to get on the street for you. I mean, that's the feeling you could get when you're that kind of isolated person. So I can feel where those kids are coming from in terms of feeling isolated and really hesitating on how should I react, you know, because they're just about willing to battle. It's like, are we going to make it to the plane at the airport? I mean, that's right. The kind of feeling you're feeling when you are away. And for some of these kids, you know, you got kids on that team who, you know, this is a big change. I mean, they probably, you know, traveling on a plane to their different destinations and things like that. But you got a lot, you know, you got some of these kids are first generation low income kids. You know, just getting out into this situation for first time is something different. And so it's a different dynamic. And you would think twice about how you might handle a situation environment. Also, you hear a lot about folks. A lot of time you talk about it's a different kind of judicial system.
Yeah.
So all that stuff is put in your mind before you go on a trip like this.
I seen locked up abroad.
Yeah. So
I don't want to be locked up abroad.
Yeah. If you hit somebody in mouth in New York City, you know, you might just get out of there and they'll talk about it on ESPN. You hit somebody, you know, in Beijing, and if you hurt somebody, you might just be there and your team is coming back.
Hey, you're going to have to – they're not letting you go. They're not letting you come back. You just got to stay.
Like one of the things that I saw from it, and again, I mean, Devon, you bring a lot of strong points to it, and it is funny. It is funny as well. But one of the things I thought about is I don't think JT3, you know, John Thompson III, the head coach, is getting enough credit for the way that he got his team out of there.
Yeah.
You know, because guess what? If this thing would have settled down and another chippy play happens a few minutes later, we may have been talking about something that was a lot more extreme.
That's right.
You know, in that situation, you know, we'd be talking about JT3 losing his job.
Yes.
We'd be talking about how he didn't handle the situation correct.
That's right.
You know, I think if it was Coach K taking his team off the court, you know, all of a sudden, there'd be a lot of praise, there'd be a lot of wisdom, there'd be a lot of things. Coach K did the right thing, but this story, like, we're not really hearing about JT3's action. It looks like he smoothed things over, talked to the coach the next day, got things figured out, his team moved on and played in Shanghai, a couple other places. You know, and, you know, I just, you know, kind of going back to Georgetown being Georgetown in the 80s, you know, I just can't help but think that perhaps that has an impact on the story as well.
I think you hit it right on the head that I think, you know, people, and I think John Thompson, part of the second, Coach Thompson, the original Coach Thompson, always came in because he was battling, they were battling for a whole different thing to build the program. They're battling for the fact that you could build a program where you could have all black players and we could be disciplined and we're going to fight you for everything. And these
it's
kids
at a prestigious academic institution.
And it's at a prestigious academic. So he brought that vigor. We had a chip on our shoulder. And I think John Thompson III is kind of smooth. One of my colleagues told me at the university when as we came on to start doing my work recently, he said the first couple people had to tear up the hill just to get the stuff going. It's our job in the institutionalize this. And so what's happening right now with Georgetown is there's an institutionalization of the program in a way evolved is much different than like a Duke evolved. And in the context of black athletes and who they are in America. So, you know, when you talk about the face of college athletics and African-American athlete, when you talk about that whole kind of identity, particularly in the 80s, in the 90s, Georgetown was – signified. I mean, Georgetown, people wore Georgetown hats like they wore Raider hats, you know, in a sense in terms of, and Georgetown hats with this kind of pride of like, you know, public enemy, you know, that held that or that kind of, just that kind of, you know, us against the world kind of mentality. And that's why people all over America wore G-Tire. So they brought a certain persona to it that I think, like you said, I think impacts the way people view this incident. And I said, yeah, I think the way that Coach Hanlon got those kids out of there, the fact that they sat down and had the teams get together after the fact, and the coaches, I mean, that's what this is all about. It's about education. It's about how do you create global citizens. These kids are out here learning what it means to be a global citizen. That's part of this experience. And learning
I think you're hitting it right on the head as well. I mean, without John Thompson in the 80s and 90s, what he did, I mean, in some ways, he's a pioneer. You know, he, Nolan Richardson, you know, some of the early African-American coaches like them, without them, there's no Quanzo Martins.
Yep.
There's no Shaka Smart.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there's not a lot of young African-American coaches that are getting opportunities. And so, again, if JT3 doesn't show this wisdom, oh, this would be a big story, because all of a sudden the story would be, here's John Thompson, this pioneer that's done all these things to give these young minority coaches, you know, opportunities, and then here comes along his son who blows it.
Yep.
Okay? So again, you know, I think John Thompson III handled himself real well and handled it, you know, his team as well as the university that he represents.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Marcus. You got it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, and what's I think what's so important about this is, you know, when I was in China last year at the World Expo, one of the things that they each pavilion, the theme was kind of like really looking at kind of the future of kind of urban development and society and just kind of future. And one of the things that the Chinese had everyone had this kind of a film or had something that they wanted to do. And the Chinese Expo, which was incredible, their pavilion, which was incredible, focused on one of the things they had at the end of their film when they talked about the future of China was very multicultural. Like I was so surprised in terms of how they projected where they want to be in 25 years as a multicultural kind of community. And what I realized, and part of what I had to talk to my colleagues, because I had colleagues, all people of color, it was hard dealing with folks staring at you and how people interacted with you. There were times, I mean, I'm a big guy, and a lot of folks, I drew a lot of attention. And a lot of my colleagues were, like, feeling sorry for a time, taking pictures and doing some different things. But one of the things I said is that for them, for a society to get to that, you got to go through this. And the importance of having you know, not only African Americans but Latino folks, you know, in terms of all types of folks engaging globally, and particularly in China, and being there, working through these things are very important. And so in athletics has always played a role in terms of opening doors and beginning this kind of transformation. But that was what they project. And so I realized that's not gonna happen without stuff like this happening, where you have people who have just never seen anybody any different like this. A lot of the folks who live in urban communities right now in China are coming from rural environments where there was no contact. Many of the folks who live in urban environments who were there for a long time, grew up in Beijing, Shanghai, have been in a more international context and have seen a lot of diversity. But a lot of the folks who are living in those communities now are coming from rural communities for which seeing a black person and all this stuff is new. So there's a lot of things that, I mean, these sports, these games and stuff are opening up a lot of other doors for other kinds of students and other folks to be able to come in, be a part of this. So I think that sometimes gets lost in all of this, and that's why a lot of these folks are traveling globally and playing like this globally, because they open up doors for other opportunities.
Yeah.
I think I took too deep.
you took it where it needed to go. You took it where it needed to go, which is what we do here. You know, we take the conversation where it needs to go. So,
right.
You know, we are going to transition. We're going to keep it on college sports. You know, we're going to transition from talking about the whole Georgetown China situation, because I think D just wrapped that up and put a pretty bow on it. So I'm going to leave it at that. You know, sometimes, you know, we can't go on after that, you know. So sometimes you don't follow certain acts. We're not going to follow that up. We're going to let that one marinate for a moment. But we are going to get into the Texas A&M situation. Now, right now, college sports is in a state of flux, particularly college football. You have violations of the yin-yang. Everybody's got a violation right now, it seems. Everybody who's anybody, at least. And then you also have a lot of this kind of cloak and dagger backroom conversation about conference alignment and movement and things of that nature. As we speak, there may be a backroom deal going on to have a team leave a conference into another conference. And Texas A&M is about to jump the Big 12, which, I mean, what are they down to, like 7-8 teams right now? They call it the Big Handful?
That's right.
You know, so Texas A&M is about to jump ship and move into, they talked about them going into the SEC. Now, that would take the SEC to 13 teams. They'd probably add another team, which means they're going to probably pull another team from another conference. Again, we talked about this last year with the Nebraska move and Colorado and Utah moving to the Pac-10 and Boise State moving into the Mountain West and TCU going to the Big East. But again, as these moves continue to happen and the alignments continue to shift within conferences, where is this going? And is this a good move? Is this a good move for Texas A&M? We know it's a good move monetarily or else they wouldn't do it. So we know that. We know it's a good move money-wise. What I'll say is it a good move? This is a question I'm going to ask. Is it a good move for their profile as a program, and is it a good move on the field? Is it going to translate to – is anything going to be different on the field with Texas A&M?
When I looked at this, I was like – I didn't feel like it was a good move. And the reason why is that when you look at the structure of the SEC, I can't see Texas A&M being better than they are now, 7-4. They have a better chance in the Big 12 or whatever they called it to – advance and grow. You know, I know everybody's overreacting to Texas getting, you know, the TV deal and all the exclusive stuff and what that's going to do in terms of access to high school athletes in the Texas brand. But that's not going to change if you go to SEC country.
Right.
That's just going to exist. And so, but it, just from a competition standpoint, I think they're beginning to build, you know, They had a pretty good program last year. You know, they got a player like Von Miller who has been drafted, going to the league, giving some exposure for recruits and continuing to get back to them getting that recruiting pipeline. And I just felt like the Big 12 is probably a better position. Now, there are other sports that they're good at for which the SEC would allow them, and sometimes these decisions are not just made on football, but when they start looking at all the other sports and where they – can compete and be elite across their athletic program. And I haven't assessed those other Texas A&M sports. You know, maybe they feel like basketball is a place where they could really rise and get a profile there in basketball as well, and baseball and some of the other things that they're doing. But I just didn't feel like it was the best move for them. Now, the question I had, and I know Phil is going to jump in here in a minute, but did the SEC say that they come back after a meeting and say they weren't going to expand?
Well, the SEC said that basically it's on hold. They're gonna look into it. Both parties say the SEC is saying they're not doing anything right now. They're not gonna make a decision right now.
Okay. But we're feeling that they're just delaying the inevitable in a sense.
I think they are. I think both teams are gonna do their due diligence. Both universities are gonna do organizations, one university, one conference, are gonna do their due diligence and make sure it's the right move. You know, I think if the SEC expands, they're going to make sure. Right now, the SEC don't need to do nothing.
Yes.
You know, they got the toughest conference, the best conference. They got 6 or 7 ranked teams in the preseason rankings. They've got the last 5 champions residing in their conference. They don't have to do anything. They definitely don't have to let in a Texas A&M, who's a middling team in the Big 12, which is, you know, 3 notches down in the pecking order of conferences from the SEC. So I think that's the SEC is saying, let's push the pause button. Let's figure out what resources you guys are bringing to the table and how you're going to raise the profile of our conference if we're going to allow you in. Because right now, You know, if you come into our conference, you're basically another Mississippi State in the SEC.
Well, I mean, what SEC wins is that their teams get to play regular games in the state of Texas.
Right, right.
So so when LSU is coming into Texas, that's going to help them with recruits and, you know, securing a foundation in Texas. And so, in a way, it's a good thing. It revives a lot of the old SWAC, the South, whatever.
Southwest Athletic Conference.
You know, the old rivalries they had with Texas A&M and Arkansas and some of these other teams that were part of that. So I think, it opens up some of those rivalries that had gone to the wayside that people loved a lot. So it provides opportunities for that. So I just don't think if I'm looking at if football's your driving force, if I'm Texas A&M, I'm still not quite sure. You mean you're going to be in a conference where you're going to be competing, I mean, even in a division, where you're going to have to compete maybe against Alabama and LSU? Are you going to beat them?
Right. I mean, they basically going to go into the SEC and become Mississippi State.
Yeah.
If you win eight games, you had a good season.
Well, every couple of years, if you do it right, the Big 12, you could beat Texas, and you might be able to beat Oklahoma.
And you might be able to get a BCS bid.
That's right.
And to me, what I see the potential for, if this whole kind of super conference, the movement towards, coalescing a lot of good teams in one conference, if this continues and the conference realignment continues to go the way it has gone, I think it's gonna create an environment where a tournament is gonna be necessary. Because you're gonna have a Texas A&M or Texas or, a Nebraska or a Notre Dame or some of these kind of mid level schools placing fifth in these major conferences. You know, where now they went from being a high profile team in the conference by themselves to now, if Texas were to go into the SEC or Oklahoma were to go into the SEC, they could finish fourth in the SEC any year. They could win it any year. They could finish fourth, depending upon the schedule and where they got to play. And so if you have these super conferences where you have, four 16-team conferences, that type of a structure will require a tournament because the BCS just – the way the BCS is set up, it wouldn't work.
What I would say is you better off staying in the Big 12 and then strategically setting up super matchups in your out-of-conference schedule. That's what, I'm saying? Do a home-and-home or whatever with LSU.
Right.
Really, set your out-of-conference schedule in a way that beats you up in terms of your strength of schedule, but still have, you need an Indiana every once in a while just to get healthy.
Right.
And so, but if you're in the SEC, even when you play Mississippi State, it's always like I used to say about Michigan State, even before they were great, this past year, it's the kind of team that most teams play and come away injured.
Right.
So even when you play at Mississippi State or Ole Miss, you still could walk away with some crutches. you need a Baylor every once in a while, but you could set up a Notre Dame, or you could set up maybe you might play Michigan, or you could set up, whatever matchup you want to do, kind of structure your stuff. I mean, that's how Michigan used to do it way back in the day. They always play their first two games were tough. They play like Florida State, then Notre Dame. I mean, sometimes that's how you start out. You kind of set the table like that and set that in the voter's mind. If you go 2-0, you good.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you go 1-1, you're still in the conversation. So I think people need to think more strategically like that than what they get from a power conference. What this is saying is, it's funny, college football, NCAA cracks me up sometimes with all this stuff because we talk about amateurism and then all these decisions are made up about money, and these are all college presidents that have to support this.
Yes. Bill T had an interesting point. I want him to jump in and touch on his interesting point because he's looking. He had a real interesting take on the whole moving of the conferences and everything, and I want him to go ahead and touch on that before we move on and get to talking about the money because you gave us a nice segue there, D, and I want to capture that for the fan. We're going to talk about that money issue in a moment.
Yeah. Before I get to that, I think, to answer the original question, I think it's a bad move for Texas A&M. I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, the home of Western Michigan University, which was in the MAC, still is in the MAC. And I recall my older brother, you know, was an all-state athlete in a couple different sports. He really wanted to go to Michigan. But at that time, Michigan football was recruiting nationally at that point. But they were a top program. But guess what? He went to Western Michigan, and one of the biggest reasons he went to Western was because you get the opportunity to play against Michigan every year. You know, my concern with Texas A&M is a lot of kids that they get at Texas A&M are so-called Texas rejects. Now, you can be all-state in Texas, you know, even All-American in some situations, and Texas may not want you because they're able to recruit All-Americans and all-staters all over the country. So, again, getting Texas leftovers, that's not bad, especially with Texas being such, you know, a top five football state in terms of high school football talent that comes out of there. So I think if Texas A&M leaves the Big 12 and they walk away from some of those rivalries, because, again, remember, Oklahoma and Texas, they're only separated by that Red River. So you get a lot of kids in Oklahoma, you know, that are from Texas and vice versa. So if you leave out of the Big 12, I think Texas A&M, they're gonna become the Ole Miss. Not even Mississippi State. They're going to become the Ole Miss of the SEC. The other thing I thought about with the Big 12 is, what about Kansas? You know, you got Kansas here that is, you know, one of the, you know, has one of the best traditions in college sports, specifically because of their basketball program. But they're kind of left in this big, you know, whatever the Big 12 is down to, 9 teams, 10 teams, 8 teams, whatever it is after Texas A&M leaves, if they do, you got Kansas here holding the bag, you know, and K-State's holding the bag and other schools too, but Kansas, you would think they'd have more clout within the conference, but they really don't. Even though they won a national championship just a couple of years ago in basketball, they don't have that staple football program. Okay, I mean, you go to Kansas, and, you know, Texas, their stadium holds near 100,000, 90 to 100,000. You go see a game at Kansas State, it's 40 to 50,000 people there. And so, you know, I think it's, they don't have the leverage. You know, Devon always talks about, you know, leveraging yourself. Kansas, they're in a situation where they don't have the leverage to do a lot of things. So, I mean, that was one of the things that I looked at.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think Kansas is a get. If when the alignment started and the Big Ten talked about picking up new teams and Kansas wasn't in the conversation, I knew it wasn't about basketball. It was a football-driven decision. Because for a conference to get, if the Big Ten were to add Kansas and Kansas basketball program to the Big Ten, the Big Ten has been elevated to a whole new level as a basketball conference. Football conference, not so much. Kansas could compete in the Big Ten. Would they be a contender on a national level? No, they have never been a contender on a national level. Would they be a contender in the conference? Probably not for a while. And, I mean, there's no big markets in Kansas. Kansas is kind of just no man's land as far as the situation. So, you know, but I think Kansas, the basketball program is a get, and I think it's a sneaky get for a conference like the Big Ten if they wanted to absorb a Kansas or something like that.
Let me ask you a question, because conferences have the ability, and this might not make any sense on the onset, but the conferences have the ability to decide how they decide a champion, right?
Right.
Let's say if you're Big 12 and you're losing things, could the conference create their own two-tier tournament for a champion just to kind of create a different frenzy in their conference? You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Rather than just kind of having a conference championship, could they create kind of a semifinal and a final in a way that would just give their conference? If you're losing out, if you can't leverage, I don't know if it's even rationale, but I'm saying sometimes when you can't be the SEC, you have to create something different that
creates
excitement. And I was just trying to figure out, you know, how something like that might work. I'm trying to figure out how you can start to a conference could take on this. I don't even know what the benefit would be yet, but kind of have a two-tier decision on their champ. Because I think some of these conferences get left out. I have to think about different ways to make it what it is to be in their conference. And they have to think differently about this because, you know, we're basically going to be thinking about three conferences, really, SEC. I mean, the Big East and the ACC are out there, but you're already talking about Florida State coming, going to
the SEC. The U finna get the death penalty.
The U is about to get straight buzzed on the chair. so you're basically looking at the SEC, Big Ten, and the Pac-12, or whatever they call it, Big 12, whatever. So you got really three conferences that are holding a lot of stuff down right now. So some of these conferences got to think about something different about how they might approach some of this stuff, and that's just kind of out there. I don't know if it even makes sense. But it's out there to kind of think about, you know, they got to add a twist to what it means to be in their conference to add some kind of value to it because, you know, football is driving a lot of these decisions. And so you got to just think differently about it. I just can't see Oklahoma and Texas wanting to join something else.
Right.
They're basically the anchors, so they're going to have to figure out how to make this work.
Right. And it doesn't make sense for them to join something else, in my opinion.
No,
when, you know, when you're the big dog, and then, like I said, if either one of them goes into the SEC at any given season, they could finish fourth. When I could really never, ever see them finishing fourth in the Big 12 unless something goes terribly wrong.
And even if the conference is a little bit weaker, they got a certain level of their own value. They're kind of like...
And they can still draw in a big game.
You know, Penn State and Notre Dame independents. Even though they're in the conference, they're always going to, like you said, they're always going to carry their own words. If they're undefeated, they're always going to say Oklahoma's Oklahoma.
Right. Right. And do it like I do on NCAA Football 12. NCAA Football 12, first game of the season, I can make my own schedule. I always tell them, number one team in the country. Because I'm going to beat the brakes off of them. I'm going to make a statement.
That's right.
I don't care who it is. Number one team is my first game of the season. It's going to be under the big lights and everything.
That's right. They like UNLV basketball.
Right. I want Corso and Herb Street announcing my game, all my games.
they're going to be like UNLV basketball. We're going to beat this top five team by 25, and then we're going to go back here and play Santa Clara.
Right.
Speaking of
UNLV and that program died because of violations under Tarkanian. We gotta unpack this whole Miami situation, man. It's getting ugly for my folks down in Coral Gables, down in Dade County.
What
it's getting ugly down there.
What is Donna doing down there?
Lord have mercy. And this was a question when all of this broke. I posed a question to the fellas over text. And I said, this is something we got to unpack. We got to talk about this whole Miami situation. You know, you got the Shapiro cat rolling on everybody. And from the stories of what this cat was into, what he was doing for players, as all of this is coming out, and I'm reading this, and how he's snapping on compliance people, you know, going off on compliance people in the press box, at one point, it just hit me like, if he was black, he couldn't have done all of that, man. Like, Luke could not have done what Shapiro did, and the university co-signed on that. The university was not going to co-sign on Luke Skywalker, Uncle Luke, snapping out on compliance people. I mean, and then the whole idea of him snapping on a compliance person, that's like a murderer snapping on a cop. Like, you breaking every law we got. And you snapping on a person that's supposed to be, you know, upholding the laws.
Yeah.
So, and it looks like, I mean, he naming names. It's the whole situation of, hey, y'all, we caught. Hey, y'all can come out now. We caught. Everybody. You know, you playing hide and go seek with that one kid. He get caught. He want everybody else to get caught. You know, hey, I found you. Hey, they got us. Y'all can come out now. Everybody come out. Come on. You over here, come on. Come out from behind the TV. Come on. You caught. We caught. Let's go. We all caught. We going to jail. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? And that's what Shapiro basically rolled on everybody. I mean, he named names. I mean, he going back like 10 years to early 2000 teams. So, Miami...
What makes this thing so different is they got coaches in on this at the party, at the club, whatever in the state. That's the usually when these things roll out, it's just, you know, it might be, you know, Booster doing his thing. Even if you got coaches connected, they never make that connection. But they talking about everybody. I'm like, was he putting something in everybody's drink? I mean, it's
$100 bills.
I'm saying at Miami, given everything they went through.
Yeah, man.
That's the part why I couldn't understand how it happened, given everything they had to go through. You mean it still happened? I just couldn't. I mean, I've been around compliance folks. These folks are compulsive. They are over. Rightfully so, because of this kind of stuff. And for this to run away, it's for me. I can't get my mind around it. Stripper is everything. I'm just like, these folks were just played up running the club.
Yeah.
And here, it was so bad, Michael Irvin came out and sounded like a saint. That threw me out. Well, I thought Mike, I was like, hey, man. Mike, you're right. You're right, Mike. I mean, Mike was coming up on high ground, and you know he was partying with Luke.
Right.
Even Mike was like, it's bad.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
So what happens now? So what does the NCAA do? I mean, you got this situation. You got the situation in North Carolina where Butch Davis gets fired. And, again, Butch was running the show in Miami. You got the situation in Oregon. You got everything going on at Ohio State. You got USC is under black cloud right now. You know,
the thing about Shapiro was he was so smart about it. I mean, people are talking about he was associated with a Ponzi scheme, but at the time he was probably an upstanding banker, upstanding investment banker. You know, in like he was in Fortune 500, I saw earlier today. You know, so the president and the coaches, I mean, this was a trusted person. You know, I don't think Uncle Luke goes that route. I don't think Uncle Luke gives $200,000 to the school every other year. You know, so I think that's part of the way that Shapiro got in the door. You know, Uncle Luke, he could have done that, but I don't think that's the route he was going.
And I think, you know, I think that the and that's where this becomes sticky, because part of what makes the enterprise work in athletics is that it's a very important fundraising enterprise for non-athletic type events. It's the entree to building the library, to beginning to talk about things around a lab, if you want a research lab. It becomes a space in which even those conversations can happen. And so that's why this thing gets real real delicate. And it goes back to, I mean, I'm glad the NCAA is looking at the rule book and looking at really simplifying a lot of this. But this really gets down to, everybody's been talking about, you know, $30,000, women and all this stuff. This isn't just about getting a little extra money to eat because you don't have enough food to eat. Like, this is going beyond that. Like, if you're getting money and you're getting watches and you're getting women, it's not about just trying to do this. This is about a decision. And I think the biggest problem in this scenario is that it's a free market enterprise for everybody but the player. So everybody says, well, the player should be satisfied with what they're getting. And we can unpack that a lot. But everybody around that person is a free market enterprise. If you are a trainer, if you are anybody who's associated with it, gets to do anything how they want to do it. If they want to leverage themselves to go and get more money at another institution, I don't care if you're a manager, I don't care if you're whatever it is, everybody else has free choice all around that scenario but the player.
Right.
In a multi, almost a billion-dollar industry. When you think about all the things that drive revenue around it. So I think that creates the backdrop, and when you think about some of the decisions made about these super conferences and how people are doing it, all that stuff. So what you got is you got young cats looking at everybody getting paid. And the only folks that they're asking to be moral about it are the players, and not everybody else to be moral. So we haven't talked about how do we hold coaches' salaries down.
Right.
Why did, was it Musgrave or whatever, why did he get $1 million as an assistant at Texas? Like, is assistant coach really worth $1 million? Like, tell me, what scenario? All of us have been around sports. We all coached. We all know what it takes to coach at that level. We know it's a lot of hours. But can you think of any scenario in which an assistant is worth $1 million?
Like one of the things we've been talking
if
about.
If an assistant had a genie that would grant wins at his beck and call, and he had unlimited wishes with that genie, then $1 million would be worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean these kids. Go ahead. What were you gonna say, Phil?
I think you're onto something, Devon, because you know, I was just reading an article in ESPN magazine, and they surveyed, I don't know, 50 or 60 Division I assistant coaches and 15 or so head coaches. And one of the questions they asked is, who's more important to a program, the head coach or all the assistants combined? And 80% of the people in the poll said assistants, including all the head coaches that took the poll. And I think what that says is the head coaches, I mean, you know, all of us have played college sports. You know, Devon and I played college football. Your offense and defensive coordinators, they're almost like head coaches by themselves.
Right.
And your head coach is, you know, especially at that level, that's the person that's probably going to the fundraising. That's the person that, you know, probably doesn't do a lot of the emailing, texting, and calling to recruits, but probably comes in to the blue chippers to speak to them, make selective trips, and maybe close the door every blue moon. It's these assistants. And a lot of these assistants aren't getting paid $1 million. They're getting paid $80, $100, $110, and they see their head coaches making $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these bigger conferences making a couple million a year, and they're trying to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But what are they trying to do? They're trying to make a name for themselves. You know, one of the books I started reading a couple of weeks ago was Counterfeit Amateurs that Devon put me onto by Alan Sachs.
Right. Yes, right.
You know, this is a guy who played in the 60s, played at Notre Dame. He's an academic now, played in the NFL shortly, I believe. One of the things he talks about is, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and prior to that, freshmen were not allowed to play football. They weren't allowed to play most NCAA sports. And so now you've got this culture where you're bringing in kids that they need to produce right away. Even if they're not going to play, they need to be productive practice players. They need to be, like, they need to do all this stuff opposed to getting adjusted to college in terms of class, sports, social life, all this kind of stuff. And so the expectation is, like you mentioned earlier, is that these student athletes are not getting treated like student athletes. But we want
right.
them to act like student athletes.
That's right. That's
I don't get
right.
that. You know, I mean, we're talking about the death penalty here for Miami, but if you ask me, there needs to be reform for the entire deal. When you got Ohio State, which, again, before all this stuff came out, if you wanted to list top five programs that were doing it clean, most people would have said Ohio State. Just like right now in baseball, tell me five players that are not on steroids. Most people will say Derek Jeter. That was Ohio State a couple of years ago.
Yep.
You have these kind of issues, these high-profile type of teams, I think you need to look at the entire program and not just penalize Miami, because what are you going to do there? You're going to hurt kids that are there now that didn't, for the most part, didn't partake in a lot of these issues. You know, kind of like the whole USC thing with Reggie Bush. So I think they need to look at the whole thing and not just penalize one school strongly.
And I think, you know, because, I mean, you know, Gordon G said famously, when he said about, you know, they said, you know, whether or not he was going to fire Tressel, he was hoping that Tressel was going to fire him, and he kind of, you know, was tongue-in-cheek about it. But, you know, a lot of institutions – you know, that is the relationship. And the reason why that relationship's there is because it needs the athletic arm because of the way it produces revenue and how it also leverages. When I tell people about the bowl game, the reason why bowls are not going away is because they are fundraising experiences. If you've ever looked at the schedule for every team that ever goes to a bowl, and you look at the layout that their Alumni Association and Foundation has put together for all those teams, that is all about fundraising. It's one of the biggest fundraising activities because of the space you look. So there's too much of the money is it warps how you might deal with that, particularly as a college president, because if you think about the roles of college presidents, the roles of deans, the roles of all these folks on these campuses, much more of their job, because of the way institutions are funded, rely on non-state, non-federal funds, which means they have to really access their alumni and donors, sources of money they have to do. So all this is embedded together. It's all embedded together. So that's why people say, you know, Shalala, why would you? It's back to your point. I love the way you kind of, because everybody has Shapiro kind of couching the same way. And Phil, I love the way you said, well, until this time, he was just seen as an investment banker. Very legitimate, writing $250,000 checks, right? And for a institution that's a private institution that relies a lot on its endowment.
Sure.
Right? So all these pieces are in it, and then you have college presidents making the decisions, right, whose jobs have become more and more fundraising, and more of it is linked to how alumni feel about the institution is linked to how the sports programs perform. So this is all – so, you know, Marcus, you kind of put it out here. That was – you know, Donna Shalala was, you know, at our former institution. I mean, she did a lot for changing how things were financed. I mean, she's considered a brilliant woman, you know, a great educator. So when a great educator like that gets caught up in a mess like this, you know it's twisted. Right? I mean, I know people who love Donna Shalala and think she was a great leader. There's some people that she kicked their butt, but she's a doer. I mean, this is a smart woman.
And so, again, I have to ask the question, does it matter? Does it matter that the cat got money?
You know me. I got my. I'm
because what I'm alluding to, is our football. Because really, the NCAA doesn't have any jurisdiction over the BCS.
Yeah.
Over. So at some point, maybe Ohio State, Miami say, "F it. We're gonna do our own thing," and maybe they get Texas and Oklahoma and you know. Snatching teams out the Big Ten, snatching USC, get a North Carolina, and be like, look, we're going to do our own thing. We don't need – the NCAA doesn't provide us anything at this point.
And that's why they're dancing, because they – I mean, the book that Phil just talked about, that Bill Phil just talked about, talks about that and how that all evolved, and that's the little – the tension that people don't know about, that these major teams, you could have 50 or so of these major programs – decide we're going to take our ball and walk away. You know, if you really think about it, they could do exactly what you're talking about. I would probably want to pose another question. You know, as three African American males, in understanding how we want people to grow and develop, how do we feel about it looking through that lens?
Well, this is for me. For me, it boils down to this.
As we know, all money ain't good money.
Right.
Like, all decisions ain't good decisions.
Right. And I think
a lot of young people.
I think the situation as a whole, the structure of college athletics, particularly with football, and to a certain extent basketball, but mostly with football, things have to be restructured. Things have to be done differently in regards to what are violations. But then also, you know, I work in the schools, and what we try and do in the schools, and one movement that we're making is we're moving more towards positive incentives. So helping students understand the benefits of doing things the right way and being overt about teaching young people, if you do things the right way, there are more opportunities that are going to be allotted to you. Right now what we do is we tell kids what not to do. You know, we have 100 rules. All telling kids, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. We don't explain to kids what to do. And then when the kids that are doing these things, we never say nothing to because we're spending all the time slapping the kids that ain't doing right on the wrist. And so we're giving the kids who are doing the things the wrong way all the attention, and not acknowledging the kids that are performing at a high level and are doing the things the right way. I think what the NCAA needs to do is they need to move towards some sort of a structure and system that allows for teams who are performing under the rules and regulations, who are doing things well in the rules and regulations, some additional benefits. The same way they restrict teams that aren't, give some extra benefits. Give 20 extra scholarships to a team that has a 5-year run of a clean program. You know what I'm saying? Give them some extra monetary benefits. Maybe even allow them to give stipends to players. You know what I'm saying? And have a threshold for if you have this many years with no violations, you can do this with your players. You know, begin to build in an infrastructure that supports and gives teams an incentive to work towards actually complying. Because right now, the positive outweighs the positive. Okay, sometimes you got to fight a positive with a positive. And what I mean by a positive with a positive is that the positive right now is that if you pay players, if you got players getting paid by boosters, you're gonna get the players you want. You're gonna get those players in your program. You're gonna win games. You're gonna make money for the institution, which means you make money for yourself as a coach. Now, the only downside is you might get caught. But by the time they catch up, it's too late. It's the same thing with these young men. You know, Ja'Cory Harris and a lot of the players that have been named are juniors. They've been in the program for 3 years. Most of these cats were thinking, again, if I'm a young man and I'm in this situation, they're probably thinking, by the time the NCAA catch on, I should be in the league by then. Look at Terrell Pryor. He's going into his senior year. He got caught up. If it takes 3 years to figure it out, then the cat's going to say, well, let me go ahead and ride this out. And by the time they figure it out, I jump ship and go pro. Now, it may not always work out that way where they have that option, but that's how the young men think about it. So I think part of it is the system needs to be restructured so that it's not as – because you and I know the right and wrong is a very fluid concept in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes decisions are made based upon options. So what is your option in that particular situation? And what are your options? You know, I tell people that all the time. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to sell drugs. There's a lot of decisions and a lot of things that happen to get to a point where that's your best option to make money. And so then you go and do that. It's not like I woke up this morning saying I'm going to be a drug dealer. A lot of those kids, you know, some of those kids may not have gotten to a point where they said, hey, I'm going to take some money. Now, I don't want to victimize these kids and say that they're victims, because a lot of them probably did say, hey, he's giving out money. Everybody else is taking his money. I'm going to get some. But I think there's a climate that makes that seem as if that's the best option. And so then that's where those kids then make that decision that's what I want to do. Because that seems like that makes the most sense. Given the options I got in front of me, that seems like it's just like voting. You know, you got the Democrats and the Republicans, and you're going to choose whichever one makes the most sense. Neither one of them may be the right choice. You know what I'm saying? Neither candidate may necessarily be the right choice for you. They may not necessarily have the right frame of mind that's going to meet the needs that you have. But given those two options, and you have to make a choice, you're going to make a choice. And so I think there needs to be a piece of this that begins to look at how can we create a positive that's going to outweigh the positive that already exists from this whole situation. Because to me, if I'm a coach, if I'm running a program, and I know that they may not catch me, they're not going to catch up to me, because I've been doing it already, and I've been doing it for, and the only reason Miami's getting caught up is because dude is rolling on everybody because he's in jail. So again, if he's not getting indicted on this whole Ponzi scheme deal, nobody's saying nothing about this.
Go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say, it reminds me a lot about Jose Canseco. You know, one of the reasons he came out is because he felt outed and blackballed as well. You know, here's a guy kind of like the Brett Favre, the Barry Bonds. You know, he's a little bit over the hill, getting close to 40, and he still wanted to play. And teams just weren't willing to give him a shot for whatever reason. So he's like, hey, I'm taking my ball, I'm going home, and I'm calling out everybody, just like Shapiro. And at the time, it sounded like blasphemy, but, you know, at this point, 5, 6, 7 years later, we know he was telling the truth. So, you know, I think you bring up a quality point, Marcus. a lot of people don't have the incentive to whistleblow until they're on the outside looking in. And, I mean, just think about all this blackmailing that probably goes on. You know, okay, so I'm a booster for the past 10 years. I've gotten box seats, but now all of a sudden I don't get my 10 box seats. Now, we don't want that. I mean, you don't want me to come out and tell you about the time Warren Sapp came over to my house.
Right.
You don't want me to tell you about the time that this happened. You thought Reggie Bush issue was tough? No. Just wait till I tell you about this, and that. So, I mean, I think it's this culture, man, that it's, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. And, it has to do with fundraising, has to do with a lot of different things. But who gets hurt the most are these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids a lot of times. And, Mike and Mike said it well. Shapiro, here there's a 30-some-year-old guy, and he's paying cool student-athletes to hang out with him. Now, what kind of guy does that? I mean, Chris Rock talked about the old guy at the club. Who's the old guy, at the homecoming dance, with the current undergrads? You know what I mean? These are people that have this need for association,
yep.
And they're targeting these young, impressionable, gullible, poor, for the most part, kids who want this certain lifestyle. So if you have somebody that can provide them with it, a lot of kids are going to bite that. Like, they're going to bite on that. They're going to take that bait. So that's why I think the whole system needs to be evolved. Because there's so many feeders. I mean, there's so many, there's so many tentacles out there that the kids are just like, man, I mean, at some point, nobody's strong enough to say no all the time.
Right. And if you look at it, if you look at all the different violations, everybody's in trouble for something different. It's not like there's one problem. The North Carolina situation is different from the Oregon situation, which is different from the USC situation, which is different from the Ohio State situation. There's so many angles. There's so much corruptness. If I'm a coach, Trestle got that email and was like, whatever. That would take way more of my energy than it needs to take for me to go and figure out how to solve that particular problem, so I'm just going to ignore it because I got a coach. And there's no incentive for me to track down this information other than I'm going to lose my best player. And so, what is the incentive for a coach to put in the hours and put in the diligence and making sure his players are not involved in that kind of stuff? What is the incentive of running a clean program right now? What do you get for running a clean program?
Well, I think it's very hard for them to do it. I mean, most of the things that you talk about are simple things, are secondary violations. I mean, I bet you if they tracked the nature of these violations, some of it, like they had the bagel rule. They just talked about, giving students – every time something happens, the NCAA developed a rule for it. So all the rules – you know how it is. If you have 500 rules, then it's lost its value. It's lost its soundness. But if I got – I always used to tell people and I always loved John Madden. He said he had three rules, right? Pay attention, be on time, pay attention, and play like hell on Sundays. You get a core set of rules that people can get around and understand, then you can enforce it. So I think part of it is the NCAA understanding that the game is no longer in the 50s. And certain things in their rule book as it relates to today and how we set things up have to be updated. And then they need to really focus on those core things that really matter. Then you can build a compliance, you can build an enforcement group around those 10 things that really matter about managing college sports. I think that's part of it. They got to simplify that. The other part of it, and part of that is how the compensation runs. So part of it is cost, getting set up so that's, that your scholarship, everything is based on cost to attend. So now you're dealing with anybody who's talking about students need to make sure they got enough to buy their groceries, do stuff. All that stuff is related to cost to attend. You figure that out for every student. There's a budget for every institution. When they do an admissions presentation that talks about cost to attend, and that's how they figure out their financial aid budget. You do the same thing for the athletes, and you build that the same way for it. So that includes getting pizza on Sundays. So you start to simplify it that way, I think that's critical. The other piece I would add into this, because then it goes back to the point that you're making, Marcus. The other piece, I kind of ran this past one of my former colleagues at one of my former colleges who's an athlete herself, and she played college sports and actually agreed with me, is find a way, two ways. You can either take the Olympic side of it, and the Olympics have already dealt, so they gave you a roadmap, or you do this thing around jersey sales. Because I think there's ways in which you could track it and create a pool of money, because they all track that stuff, and do a percentage around jersey sales. And in some places like North Carolina, if you're a North Carolina women's soccer team, you might do really well. I mean, there's places where certain different kinds of sports might do well, but you do something that's around jersey sales. I mean, you could be Rudy at Notre Dame, and you might do better than the star quarterback.
Right.
I mean, you got a brand, right? And there's a way in which you might do. So what you do is you create those kind of incentives, and then you say, look, and then you create big-time punishments. Look, we've created ways for you to legally do something. So the punishment for this is going to be big-time severe.
Right.
That will follow you after you leave in a way that you have to pay back. Whether it's the cost of attendance for 4 years at your scholarship, it could be $100,000. You create something. So you really simplify it. You say, so at any point that we validate you did something, you pay it back that entire scholarship and all that money for the player. And then I think you also have to have something for the coaches and other administrators. But I think you can get there in a way that says it's not just about the punishment. We realize the game has changed. We're creating ways in which there might be a way for you to benefit. So the benefit might not be cashed in for you until after you leave. You know how that's adding up.
Right.
It's kind of like Greg Anthony at UNLV when he basically walked away from a scholarship because he's an entrepreneur. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? And to his likeness, I mean, and it worked out for Greg Anthony, but I think there's a way that you can build that in the system. So I think those are kinds of things. You got to simplify the system. You got to get it down to what really matters. You got to get a lot of that other garbage off the books. And you have to then find ways to address the basic question that everybody's saying about students having the ability to afford being there and address those basic needs that you say you do it. And then I think there's a way that you can do something around, I think, jersey sales, ways that you can probably figure that stuff out, because they got to track that stuff anyway. All departments, all places track that kind of stuff.
So we got a caller on the line from the 313. We're going to have them get on. Hello, you on with the Real Sports Guys.
Hi, how are you,
Dad?
Marlon Page, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
I'm awesome. I just wanted to weigh in on your conversation about the college sports. Couple things. My husband and I were talking about it today, and I think that they need to get a salary. I would look at some type of salary for the guys who are playing college sports. Why are you all quiet?
we want you to have a space to say what you got to say.
Well,
I do think
that they should have some type of salary. Well, first things first, I don't know, just in our society, I don't know when enough is enough. That's the thing. So we can give them stipends and you can do all these other things. The reality really is that if you gave somebody $5,000 a month, a college player, is that really enough? Probably not. There's going to be somebody who will be able to offer them something else. I mean, you know, it's just society. For some people, enough is never going to be enough. So, you know, the reality is that, I think. However, since we are discussing some alternatives, I'm thinking that some type of salary may work for them. That's the first thing. And then secondly, I would like, because all this is going on, I have to go back just to my Detroit, Michigan roots. I want them to apologize to Fab Five.
You want them to, why you want them to apologize to the Fab Five?
Because the same thing they accuse him of is happening today. Look at Terrell Pryor. He went on to do, he's about to sign, he just went to Oakland. He messed up. He did all these wrong things. He's still moving on. They aren't taking anything from him. So what? He misses five games. He's probably giving them the finger like, so what? I'm about to make millions of dollars. And what? And then if you notice, he changed what he said. Yes, I will respectfully sit out my five games. He signs a contract, and he's like, well, I'm going to let my organization handle it. So all I'm saying is Jalen, Chris, and all those other guys should be exonerated. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm right there with you because I think it's a bunch of coaches. I mean, Bobby Knight. Now, you know Bobby Knight was doing some illegal stuff. But back then, I mean, it's just such a different world with Twitter and seven different ESPN channels. All these old school coaches, you know they was doing dirty stuff. But at this point, you know, the flashlight and the magnifying glass is on everybody now.
Listen, I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right.
I want to ask you a quick question. Just real quick. This is D. Wills. I want to ask you just a quick question.
Sure.
What do you think? What do you think? I mean, you talked about pay. So with kind of Title IX, how do you do that in terms of handling women? I know Title IX says we have to provide equal access and opportunity, but do you think that also addresses in terms of compensation like that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think if we're going to do it for one, we have to do it for all. Definitely.
Okay.
I mean, come on. I'm a girl, so.
That's why I wanted your opinion on that.
Yeah,
I wanted to make sure
I would definitely say that, but, you know, when you really think about all of this, I mean, because realistically, this could be happening with girls, you know, sports with women. So I just think it's a deeper issue. That's going to probably be a whole nother show. And you all, I would love to be your guest on that show, but with women,
yes.
We don't care enough about women's sports. It's not the thing. It's not happening. It's and really, when you think about the root of all of this, it's the money associated with it. So all these people and the coaches talking about, you know, it's the kids and they have the opportunity and we're giving them the scholarship and we're taking them from the ghetto and giving them opportunity, that is a bunch of crap. Because if that were true, I personally know women and girls who came from, you know, the streets of Detroit who are doing their thing, but nobody cared or looked to see if they were getting free tattoos or a free car or a free lunch. So, realistically, it's all about the dollars.
Well,
so,
Title IX
is a bunch of crap.
We want you on the show. We want you on the show. I love that. I'm from Michigan, so you always, and Phil from Michigan, you always welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Phil, I know Phil from my husband, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling me.
You know how to find me. I'm very passionate about sports, so, yes. I'm happy to have found you guys' show tonight. It's a really good topic.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
It this is great because this is why I asked, because I just had this conversation with one of my colleagues she's a former college athlete. She played softball. One of the things that I spent some time with athletes, and it's funny, when you had a conversation with the women athletes just about what they're doing, they quick to talk about graduate school. They talk about what they're doing in a way that's much more focused than some of the male athletes. You talk to them, they like, I don't really know. So the purpose, sometimes you can sense the purpose for why you're there is a much different kind of conversation when you sit down with some of the athletes and talk to them. And it's a developmental process. And just that starting point in terms of how they talk about what their purpose is affects even these decisions, because all hustles are good hustles. And there's so many temptations in society, because I know we're talking about decision-making is hard to do it. But we all know all hustles aren't good hustles. And we all know there are a lot of forces out there. We all made our mistakes, right? We're never going to sit out here and say, you know, we're higher than anything. But part of this is never going to fix that system. Like, and I think she hit right it on, is that what is enough is that gets to the moral piece. Because at some point, at what point, even if you get the system, and we all say, okay, the system looks pretty good now, you're still going to have cats who are still going to be fighting with some of those kind of demons. So how do we, that's just something we got to get to, because is there a place for how we get young folks to understand that that's fool's gold?
Right, and I think you do that by giving them a reason to not break the rules. Again, what's the reason to not break the rules right now? I mean, why would you break the rules?
But I would argue, let me put this out here. I would argue, let's say they implemented what I put out there as a proposal. I think that's beginning to go in the right direction of you not breaking the rules. We create a space where you can have, generate revenue that you can see. We start to address some things. Like, what would be the top three things you would say would be incentives for not breaking the rules? Say that, I know you talked about it. Just hit me with three things you say that would be incentives for not breaking the rules.
I'll tell you, more scholarships, more practice time, more contact with recruits from an institutional perspective.
Okay.
And then you have the ability to play. Let's say we add on the idea that you can then pay players for jersey sales. Yeah, that idea. Let's go with that idea. You can pay players a percentage of jersey sales that goes into an account that they can access when they graduate or when they leave your program. But each of those thresholds is achieved. Each of those incentives is achieved after a certain threshold of running a clean program.
Mm.
So, you know, after 5 years, okay, you get more contact with recruits. After 10 years, you get a lot more practice time. So they remove some of the practice regulations. You get more practice time. After 15 years, you get 10 more scholarships. You know, after 20 years of a clean program, okay, now you can start to pay some guys. So, again, you're working up. And this is how these coaches' minds work. They're goal-oriented people. They're task-oriented people. And so when you don't give them, again, why should you run a clean program? If you can win in that, Auburn won a national championship. Auburn may go into the dumps, but they still got that title. And as much as the NCAA wants to take things away, everybody that was on that team still celebrated that title. Okay? So whatever went on that night after they won that title is not going to get taken away. You know, you can strip it out the record books, but the experience, and that's what college sports is supposed to be all about, is the experience. It's still there.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. Because I think all these ideas are quality ideas. They have merit. But right now, the biggest issue against it, I mean, you know, it's kind of like parents that don't like to talk to their kids about sex. Because they can't imagine their son or daughter is having sex.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's this thought that amateur athletics, the NCAA represents this peer idea of amateur athletics, and that amateur athletes should not be paid anything. That's the biggest issue right now, and that's going to be the thing that stands in the way of everything. That's all.
And to me, that's the and I totally feel you on that, Phil T. And to me, that's the dumbest, most hypocritical thing ever. And that's why I laugh at folks who are college sports fans. And they say, well, the pros don't care, or the pros, it's all about money. No, it's always all about money. It's always all about money. I don't care what level you're playing at, it's always all about money. If there's money to be made, it's about money. And that's what gets me with fans of college sport who say, well, the players care more, it's about the institutions, it's not about money. No, it is about money. The players don't get none of it. The players are playing hard. They're playing their hearts out. They don't get none of the money, but everybody else is bringing in a nice chunk of change. When your football coach is the highest paid state employee, yet the national political conversation is constantly about cutting government spending, but nobody's talking about cutting Brett Bielema's salary. Nobody's talking about cutting Mac Brown's salary. You know what I'm saying? That conversation is not on the table. So don't tell me it's not about money. Because the reason nobody's saying that is because they bring in money.
Yeah,
they bring in more money than it costs to pay them, and it's always about money. And maybe the NCAA just needs to own up to that. It's an image hit. You're right. It's an image hit. It goes contrary to the message that they've put out for the last 80 years as to what college athletics is supposed to be about. But college athletics ain't about that no more. It's just not. There's too much money going around. Again, when you got the Terrell Price, the Ohio State situation, we got the Ohio State situation where these guys were allowed to play in a bowl game under the guarantee if they come back the next year and sit out five games. They should have sat out the bowl game.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because it would affect the integrity of the game to have guys who are going to be suspended, who are suspended, who are going to be ineligible, who you're going to suspend and have them play, that having them play wasn't going to compromise the integrity of the game. They should be suspended. They shouldn't be playing. So, but they had to do that. Why? Because they wanted to make sure they got the right numbers. They wanted to make sure attendance was up. They wanted to make sure they got a good TV rating because there was money on the line. And that's why I laugh at college athletic fans who say it's not about money, or I don't like the pros because all the pros care about is money. Everybody cares about money when it comes to big-time sports, college and pro. It's about money. It's about the bottom line. It's about the dollar sign.
Ooh, he done burned it down on this one. Phil T, hit him up.
Hey, I feel like that James Brown cat. I need to come and put that cape on your shoulders. You broke it down. You broke it down.
I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying. I want to leave it there. And let's transition. Let's dig into the Terrell Pryor situation. You know, me and Phil T was joking off air. We recalled the Chappelle skit about Rick James, where Charlie Murphy said Rick James was a habitual line stepper, constantly stepping over that line. You know, I feel like Roger Goodell is a habitual line stepper. All right, this cat is always stepping over the line. Now, Terrell Pryor, they let Terrell Pryor in the supplemental draft, and for some magical reason, this brother gets a 5-game suspension. Now, and I'm going to throw this out to y'all. Somebody break this down for me. Why is he suspended?
Because it's a rule. Remember when we were younger and you'd ask your parents, well, why? Because I said so. No.
Exactly.
It's a rule. You know, in the last segment, we talked about deterrence. You know, for kids right now that are student athletes, I mean, one of them is the NFL. You know, you mess up, you're going to miss the first 5 games. That can hurt your draft stock. Now, keep in mind, only 1% of college football players every year get drafted or have the opportunity to make a team, so it's kind of a non-issue, you know. But again, Goodell can make rules, so he does. Now, the issue right now with this whole Michael Vick thing, you know, is these owners and team personnel, they're going to start pushing back if they feel like Goodell is guiding certain players to certain situations. Because all of a sudden, you're taking away a fair playing field.
He's playing Madden.
Right. I mean, it's okay to mandate and manage the so-called athletes that need it, these players that need it. But guess what? You start mandating these owners, you start telling them what to do as a commissioner, oh, yeah, they're going to put you in your place.
Right, because as a commissioner, he works for them. Now you raised a couple points. I want to dig into both the points that my man B. Newell raised real quick. Now, the point about the college athlete coming in, and then like if you did something in college, you can be suspended. I'm not a part of your players' union. I'm not a part of your organization. How can you suspend me for conduct that I did, for something that I did when I wasn't a part of your players' union or your organization?
Yeah, this one is the most, and it's funny, I don't hear enough outrage because people, it ties in our last conversation and who they blame, and so many folks blame Pryor for his situation, and yeah, he's got to take some responsibility and stuff like this, so they give him a pass. When I looked at this, I'm like, this is kind of like, and I'm not going to get political on one side, but this is kind of like, when a lot of folks in Ohio voted for George Bush the first time, even when he said he was taking jobs out of America. It was just one of those things where I see what he's saying. Everybody's saying, I can't understand how you vote. It's one of those things where you just couldn't just understand the logic behind it. And this is one of those things. I'm like, how? It's like people, he's just doing this, and people are just kind of going with it. And for the reason I'm saying this, you're suspending a person who's not even part of your organization. You already given a fire game coming in. That don't make any kind of sense. And even to go through an appeal process that doesn't bring that down to zero, because everyone who comes through this process is going through the process because something didn't work out where they were before. So are you suspending everyone who's coming through the supplemental process?
Right.
But if you were doing that, that would be different. But if he's the only one you're giving a five-game suspension, there's a reason why they're in the supplemental process.
Right.
And a lot of times it's stuff that they did that making them ineligible.
Hey, exactly. I mean, there's been tons of guys who come through the supplemental draft who would have been eligible otherwise if they had stayed in college, which is why they were in the supplemental draft.
So this whole process of how they're doing this, I don't even understand it in a way that, you know, you're not doing anything to Pete Carroll and some of these other cats, or, you know, are you going to do something to Trussell if he gets a job? I mean, it opens up an entire box that you just can't deal with. You can't repair the NCAA by this kind of stuff because it's inconsistent. So that's part of we talked about Goodell and why some of the players don't like him and stuff like this. It's this kind of stuff, and then folks just come in up to, you know, to support him, like, you know, he's cleaning things up, he's making it. But, I mean, process is everything. And if you don't have a process that has integrity, everybody talks about integrity, and this process has no integrity and nobody's speaking up.
Right.
It's, again, I
don't understand. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? I get it, but I don't get why do you feel the need to suspend the cat? You know, aside from how I feel about him as a player, you suspending the cat that ain't a part of your union. He didn't agree to give you jurisdiction over him yet. He hasn't entered into a contract in your organization yet.
Well, and I think that it's kind of like, you know, people when they talk about the judicial system. In times, there are people who are guilty. People are going to get away in the name of justice, right?
Right.
So, you know, so part of this is, yeah, he got out of this, and yeah, he didn't really. He kind of escaped his 5-game suspension in college, but when you set the right system, at some point it's going to work the right way. You know, you got to fix the system first. You just can't be changing arbitrarily because you're trying to chase guiltiness.
Right.
That's where your system is going to break down when you're trying to chase, you know, you're trying to be vigilante about it.
Right.
That's where it's going to break down. Sometimes in the system, guilty folks get away.
And so then the other piece to what Phil T presented, what Dino, my man Dino presented, was the whole conversation about him steering Vic to Philly. Now, I understand why he did it.
Yeah.
I understand. But what? Come on, man. This ain't your little kingdom, dog.
That's right. There are a whole bunch of places you could have steered Vic.
Right.
He would have been under a great coach or had that great kind of mentoring.
Right. Right.
You're right. It's gangster.
Yeah.
And
it's very much mafioso. There's a lot of mafioso to Goodell. You know, it's a lot of mafioso to what he does.
He uses what I call the assumptive clothes. You don't know this. That's what he just uses. Great salespeople will tell you. It's one of the methods of clothing, just assumptive clothes. You just assume the sale.
Right.
That's kind of how he goes about it. Like, I assume agreement. I just keep on moving.
Right.
You know, it ain't no discussion or need. It's just, this is the right way to go, and everybody would agree with me.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. And like I said, I understand Philadelphia at the time was probably a more welcoming situation for Vic. They had to be, the NFL as a league had to be careful about where they put him so they didn't create a media firestorm around him. They want to put him in a community that was going, you know, protest his very presence. So I get all of that. But come on, man.
They said to the community that Peter people would be scared to come by.
Right.
Philly fans don't play. Yeah,
right.
Or
Oakland fans, man.
Yeah, he could have gone to Oakland, you know, just places like that where they,
Yeah, I don't understand.
But see, Oakland as an organization is in shambles most of the time.
Al Davis. Yeah, you know, it reminds me of back in the day. You know, I love my period movies. You know, King Henry VII. You know, those kings back then, if they saw your wife and wanted your wife, guess what? That's no longer your wife. You know, I mean, Goodell is just coming in mandating stuff. You know, one thing that's going to be interesting to me is it looks like he's going to try to find cats, like find players, for stuff that they did when the union was decertified and when they were on strike. But
right.
Wait a minute. I mean, that's like it's suspending me during summer vacation when I get in a fight on the playground. I come back to school,
and I'm suspended now.
Oh yeah, I heard about you fighting. Yeah, you suspended for a week. What?
That wasn't even here. You can't suspend me when I'm at home.
Yeah, that's just run them. And the way that the players try to push up on that, and they basically said, well, we're not going to get down and not until you come a union, and they just squash them anyway. It just seems they just handled that so gangster. And I think that's the one area where the players' union lost a lot of ground in that they didn't get a better system of appeal and stuff around some of these issues. At first I was cool with it, but now I'm like, man, you said a line stepper. He's like, he was up on the line, but now he just all the way walking through it. It's like an electric fence. First he was getting shocked, but he like that dog who just don't care, just walking right through the electric fence, just like, and keep on running down the street chasing the rabbit. There are no boundaries for him anymore. And I don't know how the players are going to deal with it. At all, but he's clearly this right here tells him that he can do whatever he want to do.
Yeah, man. I mean, and I imagine the conversation with Vic went, you know, Vic is like, so, you know, how do you think this situation is going to work out for me, you know, Commissioner? And Goodell looked at him and said, you going to Philly? And Vic said, I'm going to Philly? How you talk to them? Goodell said, nah, you going to Philly. I will talk to them and you will be signing with Philly. And I can imagine that's how the conversation went. They want to know, what do you think is the best situation for you, Mike? Or we're going to see how the situation plays out. Now you're going to Philly, and you already put the call in. You know, they'll be picking you up later. Go get your stuff. Go on, get your stuff. Go on. I think it'll be stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's Goodell kills me, man. Like, he kills me, man, because this dude is just, like I said, if he wasn't commissioner, he'd be a crime boss. He'd be a perfect crime boss, man. So now what I want to transition into, fellas, is a bit of a conversation about the season is quickly approaching. The preseason is winding down, and we got to give our fans some help with this whole fantasy football situation. We got to get our listeners out there on point. So we're going to get into some fantasy football talk for the last half hour of the show. We're going to get into our five on the black hand side real quick. I got five questions for the fellas in regards to fantasy football. D, you kind of being caught off guard right now because you didn't pregame with us, but it's all good. Roll with it. You can. You're a professional.
Okay.
Five on the black hand side.
And I know you prefer it that way anyway, Devon, because you ain't trying to give up no secrets, no way.
I'm not. I'm gonna give you a framework to work within, without a lot of details.
He's going to be real Belichickian about it. Well, you know, he's hurt. You know, that's how Belichick be at the press conference. You know, he has an injury. Well, what's wrong with him? He's hurt. He broke a bone of some sort. Will he be playing? Yeah, he's probable. Yeah, that's what we're going to get out of D-Wheels in this segment.
That's it.
All right, so we got you. Question number one in the five on the black hand side. Your fantasy top five most reliable. So these are guys who, you know, every year you got to have at least one guy on your team who you know you're gonna get 15 to 20 points, or you know you're gonna get a good, you're gonna get a good production out of, depending upon your scoring format. You're gonna get some solid production out of this dude week in and week out. And every team got to have the every winning team. Now, every team don't have one. You know, teams at the bottom don't have this guy, and that's why they're at the bottom. But if you got a good team, you got to have at least one guy, one of these guys. So give me your top five most reliable. I'll kick it off. My top five most reliable. Number one is Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is if I got to pick a guy who I know I'm going to get week in, week out production from, it's going to be A-Rod. It's gonna be Aaron Rodgers. I know you know what you're gonna get. There wasn't a lot of change in the system. He's got weapons. You know, the O line seems to figure things out. He seems to be getting rid of the ball in a timely manner. He'll pick up a few yards on the ground here and there, rush for a touchdown here and there. He spreads the ball around, doesn't throw a lot of picks, gets a lot of yardage, throws a lot of touchdowns. And he's consistent. And again, the only issue with Rodgers is the concussion problem, and hopefully he's over that. Again, that's something that you really can't predict, you really can't plan for. If it happens, it happens. But Rodgers is my number one. My number two is Adrian Peterson, a guy you know is going to get the ball. He's durable. He's built to be a running back. There isn't a whole lot that's going to hold him back. I actually think, you know, he's got a good quarterback situation with McNabb. I wish the receiving core was better, but I like AP. Another guy who I think is ultra reliable, and that is Andre Johnson. Catches a ton of balls, plays in a passing offense. I mean, what can you say? You know, week in and week out, what you gonna get from him? Another guy who I think is super reliable that may kind of be off the radar, so to speak. I don't want to say he's off the radar. Everybody knows who he is. But he's not somebody that's going to come to mind immediately, and that's Roddy White. Roddy White, again, is another guy. You put him in your lineup, you know you're getting, you know, 80 to 120 yards and possibly a touchdown most weeks out of the season. You know, he's one of those guys that's going to produce. And another guy who I think is going to be a sleeper right now, but I think he's going to be real solid and real consistent this year. And that's LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount is one of those dudes who I think is going week in, week out. He's going to give you what you need. I think he's going to have a real big season. He's not really high rated. You know, he's kind of underrated right now. But you always underrated until you overrated. We know how that goes. He's underrated right now. So he's a guy I would look at who's going to give you a lot of production. Because there's always one running back who gets picked in the 5th or 6th round. Again, Arian Foster wasn't even drafted last year in a lot of drafts I was in. LeGarrette Blount is that 5th dude for me. So A-Rod number 1, Adrian Peterson number 2, Andre Johnson number 3, Roddy White number 4, and LeGarrette Blount number 5. My top 5 reliable guys. Put a stamp on it. I'm going to throw it to Phil T. What you got?
Well, for the sake of time, I'll keep my list short because there was some carryover. But for me, Jamal Charles, you know, I mean, this cat averaged, what, 5-6 yards per carry? I mean, that's pretty much, like, unheard. And, he's got a nice situation there where they like to run the ball a lot. But at the same time, he's got a timeshare situation, but because of his home run ability, he still gets you touchdowns. He still gets you enough points. The next guy would be Arian Foster. You know, I mean, this was a guy that I think I ended up drafting last year late, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th round, and he single-handedly, you know, took me to my league's, you know, championship and lost in the championship week. Nice thing about him, especially in leagues where you get points per reception, is he's a 3-down back. So he's not a guy that they take out when it's 3rd and long, or they just have him on running downs. He's in there all the time, and he gets you goal line touches, which right now in the NFL, there's not a ton of guys. There might be 5 or 6 guys that fit that mold. You know, 3-down backs, plus they get the goal line touches as well. I'm going to go with Peyton Manning. You know, I mean, Indy's trying to do this whole Belichick thing, like you were saying, trying to be real quiet about Peyton Manning, but what that tells me is Peyton Manning going to be out there. He might miss a week or two, but, you know, chances are I think he'll be out there all 16 games. And if Peyton's out there, history has shown that he's going to do his thing. There might be sexier picks out there like Phillip Rivers, as well as the cat you just mentioned, Aaron Rodgers. But at the end of the day, you know what you're going to get with Peyton. You know, he's going to get you 30-something touchdowns. His touchdown interception ratio is going to be 2-1 at worst, like last year, but more than likely 3-1, 4-1. And, you know, he's going to get you the yards as well. The other guys I had on my list was Andre Johnson and Rashard Mendenhall as well.
D. Wills, rattle them off.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to – and some of it overlaps. I decided to go with some other folks to give people a little bit more to their list. So there are going to be a couple overlaps, but then I given what y'all said, I try to add a couple more people. And we don't have to go by position, right? We can go just top five.
Yeah, you can just – yeah, you just top five.
All right. Aaron Rodgers, I agree with. I just got to say Aaron Rodgers for all the things that people are saying. I think the way they run their offense, the fact that they don't – they haven't had a consistent running game, but they just have this varied attack of which he's in the middle of orchestrating it. He's always going to be in a game to get some – to score down in the red zone, they're more likely to pass sometimes. I mean, they haven't really solidified a lot of times, even in their running game and stuff. So I think Aaron is just the kind of quarterback, he's elite. The other person I would say is a quarterback, and given the transition at a division, is going to be Phillip Rivers. I just think, you know, getting Vincent Jackson, getting back and solidified, I think their defense, I think things will settle in with San Diego there. And I think he'll give another wrinkle. I think Phillip Rivers is, you know, one of the elite quarterbacks. He's going to put up numbers. He put up, you know, big numbers last year. Is moving that to an elite level. You know, he doesn't have a Super Bowl yet. But I think it's, you know, from a quarterback standpoint in the way that they play, I think that he's one to look at. Andre Johnson, I just think he just missed it consistent. And I think that, you know, they definitely, you know, people are saying, you know, their offense was, what, 12-4, and then the defense was 4-12. I think them improving their defense is going to give their offense more possessions. They don't have to take as much chances. And he's, you know, he's that focal point of the offense. And so I see him as someone you can count. The other thing is that you got to think about with Detroit. Detroit's one of the, was, what, number two or three in passing offense. And put up, even with, you know, Stafford not being healthy, they're putting balls up in the air. And so I put, you know, as an emerging person into that next level, and this may be, you know, getting him into the Andre Johnson level, is Calvin Johnson, is one. And the other one is kind of unreliable, given that, you know, their division is going through their, a transition. You don't have too many running backs. You know, about 5 years ago, we'd have been naming about three, four running backs. You know, and then NFL went into this proliferation of multiple backs and things like that. But, you know, there was a time when we first started playing fantasy in our league that, you know, we probably would have named three running backs right off the bat. I think Chris Johnson, because of the nature of that division and the transition that some of the folks are going to go through, and I know he's got the contract issue going, but looking at their offense, and I think Hasselbeck is a serviceable person, but they're still going to rely on him to make things happen. I think Chris Johnson is someone that, just because of the way they play, you know, he's an every dollar kind of guy, that he's going to, I think he's going to, you know, try to make whatever investments they do, he's going to prove that, you know, he's one of the best in the league. He kind of had they had a lot of stuff going on last year. I think they're stabilizing that franchise. And because of what, they're not going to win a lot of games, but he's the kind of guy that if they're going to do anything, he's got to have success.
Excellent,
I
as usual.
I think I got five there. Yep.
Yeah, excellent, as usual. We're going to move on to number two. All right, we got your fantasy banana peel specials. These guys are going to get drafted high.
The production is slipping this year. All right, so they're coming in with a high rep, but there's some slippage coming.
There's some slippage in production coming. I'm going to throw this one to my man, D. Newell, first. I'm going to let you hold this one down.
All right, I hope you all sitting down. Hope y'all don't throw bananas back at me. But I'm going to go with Adrian Peterson.
I was about to. You stole it.
I'll leave that one for you, D. My second one, again, no tomatoes being thrown at me, but I'm going to go with Ray Rice for Baltimore. Ray Rice, the running back. He always gets drafted high, and he's always such a high commodity. Almost every year in the past couple of years, I'll draft him high knowing that before the season I can move him getting a couple of nice pieces back in return. Because the thing about Ray Rice, he gets a lot of yardage. He catches the ball quite a bit, but he doesn't get in the end zone enough for me. And I know they're talking about giving him more goal line touches. They got rid of McGahee. But they said that, then all of a sudden they brought in Ricky Williams, and they're going to use him as a goal line guy. So Ray Rice, he doesn't have that breakaway speed where he's going to get you a lot of touchdowns that are outside of the red zone. So, therefore, I think, you know, he's kind of a waste. I know in our league the last couple of years, he's been drafted in the first round almost every year. And to me, I just think that's a little bit too high for him.
And let it be said. D. Wills, who you got?
Well, you know, I had to kind of pull my list together as I'm. But these are guys that we already heard Adrian Peterson. I just think for some reason there's going to be a shift there, particularly with Donovan there. I think there may be some touches taken away from him that might not be there. And so he's kind of he might be that banana peel and may not produce as high as he's going to get drafted. The other thing is Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, he's the one that a lot of people like. I just think I look at Jacksonville kind of like – I was trying to figure out who I was thinking about. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's going on down there. And, he could be injury – I just don't feel like – he's a person that people like to go after sometimes high, and I don't know if he's going to produce – on the level that I am. I'm about to, because you know I was a Chiefs fan last year. You know I kind of called it out. Y'all got to say that.
Yep.
And
he called it.
I think there's going to be a sophomore jinx there, and I'm not sure if Jamal Charles is going to deliver it the way. I think people are anticipating him being a breakout, and I almost feel like there's going to be this, for the team, this kind of sophomore slump. I think losing Charlie Weiss, open up a lot of different – I still know how that's all going to transition a little bit in terms of just making some of those changes and how that might happen. And so Jamal Charles is one that I think, you know, might be a banana peel in this. And Matt Schaub is one that is going to get drafted high because people are expecting Houston to explode. In a way, offensively, and because they got the defensive piece, and I still think Andre Johnson can be old reliable, and Matt can still be a banana peel. You get what I'm saying? Because I think they got some other offensive weapons. I think they'll have a little bit more balance. But I don't think he's going to be. I mean, right now I'm looking at some rankings. He's like the third best player, you know, in terms of rankings, offensive player on the board. And I don't know if he's going to perform at third best player on the board. So that's kind of a reach, but I just got a feeling that I think they're going to still win some games. They might win them in a way that we're not anticipating them to win games, and he might not be a good fantasy. They got him like he's Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not sure if that's how they're going to perform this year, especially since they bulked up their defense a little bit. The other banana peel could be, And he's consistently ranked in that top 10, is Matt Ryan. You know, people say with the addition of Julio Jones and some of these different things, but from Atlanta can win some games, but as a fantasy player, you know, someone who is looking like he's pulling up into that top 10, you know, kind of ranking on all the fantasy lists. I'm not sure if Matt Ryan, I think there might be some fool's gold in there. That doesn't mean Atlanta's not going to be a good team, but as a fantasy quarterback, a fantasy player, I'm not sure if Matt, I think that division's getting better. I think it's going to be tougher to win some games. And I don't think from his standpoint, his numbers might not be as good as they could be, even though his team might still be successful. I don't know if I got a fifth one there.
I like Ryan. I like Ryan this year. But that you picked him, so that's your opinion. But I actually like Matt Ryan. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. I think he's going to take a big step this year. But that's me. My banana peel specials. My number one banana peel special, again, in a lot of formats, this cat's top 10. Mike Vick. I'm staying away from him. Love him as a player. Love watching him. I'm staying away from him. I'm staying away from him. The injury risk is always looming, and I think it's the same way you look at Jamal Charles, D, where he had a great year last year. He don't have a track record of putting together multiple back-to-back great years. Vic has never really put together back-to-back great years, not from a fantasy perspective. And so
they might take away your Negro card for that one.
Right. Right. I'm locking my doors right now. But, yeah, you know, I don't know. So Vic is one. Another one, again, for me, is there's always a couple running backs who you take in your top 10 who don't produce. There's always running backs who you take who are taken in the top 10 that don't produce up to the level. And, again, I'm always weary of cats that come out of nowhere, because when you come out of nowhere, it's easy to go back to nowhere, right? Arian Foster. To me, he's a cat that he had a great year last year, but, again, is he going to put it together? I don't know. I tend to stay away from guys when I'm picking that high. When I'm picking at the top of the draft, I'm staying away from dudes who are coming off their first great year. I want a guy who's put multiple years together in a row, and I know what I'm getting. Because, again, with your first pick, the worst thing to happen when you take a guy first, and this happened to me last year, all right? I took Randy Moss first in one of my drafts, and my whole team tanked after that. Whole team was doo-doo after that, because your number one guy, the guy you took first, the guy you needed that week in, week out, you know, big-time production, if you don't get it, it messes up. It's the rest of the season you're scrambling. So I try and stay away from cats who haven't had, you know, multiple, who haven't at least had a two-year run of solid seasons. So yeah, we got about a minute left. That creeps up on us real quick, man.
Ooh, yeah, we did some things today.
Yeah, that crept up on us real quick. So we got about a minute left, man. I don't have any dope lines. I don't have one this week. Y'all got one?
I heard it. My best hook. This will go back out to this. Ain't no future in your front. Ain't no future in your front. It goes out to all college sports.
Oh, man. So, hey, another great show. Real Sports Guys, Real Guys Talk Real Sports, RSG Renegade Radio. And it off. We're going to let Biggie take him out. Who the F is this?
In the morning.
All right, we off there. After Hours Edition.
After Hours Edition. That was
a good show, man. We had, like I said, man, I was telling Phil T, I was excited about the show because we had so much that happened and just so much controversial stuff had went down over the last week. That's one of those shows where it's just easy. You know, it's just easy to plan that show.
But, you know, I'm thinking about, Phil, I know you read that book. I was thinking about getting that author to come on the show.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. I just started. I'm like in chapter one or two, but, you know, it's my, you know, every morning I got that 15 minutes and I'm reading it. So, yeah, it's a page turner, man. It's a page turner, big time.
Yeah. And there's a couple of them, a couple of folks who have written on it, some folks who have been, you know, former, you know, heads and roles in the NCAA to, you know, maybe get some of those voices on to talk about people who are very critical of the current structure, who have some ideas. You know, it might be nice to even get a panel together, maybe get someone like that and get, maybe a Cecil and maybe, you know, a couple other folks who could come on and just, you know, have our own little panel of folks to talk about it.
Yeah.
Put them up with it. I'm sure we could get something. I could get my boy Richard McGregory on and from Whitewater, you know, who's faculty and just, you know, kind of our PhD, kind of talk a little bit about that from his perspective of working. Just, I mean, I think we just get some folks on. That might be an interesting kind of show to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, the system's broke. The system is broken. Ain't no doubt about that. Something's got to give. Something's got to be different.
Yeah, and it's so much stress on people within the system. I mean, I just got off the phone with my colleague who's in, you know, now over compliance and stuff like that. And there's so much, you can sense the pressure they're under and just even, I mean, they are constantly, they love what they do, but you can see it in their face, just the constant pressure that they're under when they talk, you know, work through some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, any system that doesn't allow you to clearly address the issue, like you said, you can't have too many rules.
Right.
You just need, in this case, maybe 10 things that everybody needed, like the 10 golden rules.
Right. Even God only had 10 commandments.
That's right. You know, just the 10 thou shall nots. And then the incentives part about it, you need to make it real clean and then just get after it from there. But right now, man, I talk to folks. I mean, I get nervous when I call them about things.
Right.
Because I want to make sure whatever I'm asking you is within complete. You know, I start thinking crazy. Like, I'm not just calling to ask how you doing. You know?
Right.
you,
is that okay?
Yeah. It's like.
Man, well, there was a time, man, when I was worried to call my own brother.
I could see you doing it. I mean, like, well, am I doing something wrong? Yeah,
right.
You right on it. You know,
it's like, is that okay if I take you out to lunch, man? Is that cool? I work for the university. Is that all right?
Right. I mean, this is part of it. Like, I was guest coach, and you know, my daughter came with me, and my brother came with me, and he was able to get on the field. My daughter couldn't come on the field. Now I can understand that, but there was so much you had to figure out about. So she was up in the stands with some folks who were also guest coaches. Their kids were up in the stands. They're up there together. But just the whole process, like, I didn't even think about that. I was like, I'm going to have a kind of breakfast, be able to see this. But she's in high school.
Right.
She can't even come on the field. I mean, there's so many things you try to remember through this process. It's just, you know, I'm always tippy-toeing, you know. And it's just, they got so many stuff. You down there need 5-6 attorneys in it.
Right.
The one thing I would also do is that the other thing we did talk about, I thought was a really good idea, and this is a different, this is on putting it on the institution, but allowing institutions to hire their own security people, ex-FBI folks who can go do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And get out on it. But that's
right.
Also a deterrent.
Right.
If athletes know that you got cats who are out there on you, and they come at, that's also, you're going to be looking over your shoulder in a different way, too, that they, you can hire infrastructure. Institutions can have our infrastructure to monitor that.
Right.
That could be a law enforcement infrastructure. Because you're talking about big businesses. Most of these folks, if they needed to, got the infrastructure to do that.
Right.
And they could hire, you could hire ex, you know, FBI guy. You could hire ex whatever to be part of this monitoring team.
Mm-hmm.
That you could have a group of folks who are out there working it and who have the ability, also the authority, to confront or work on behalf with some of these boosters and monitor these situations. I mean, there's ways in which you can do your own monitoring if that's something that is – that was something somebody brought up. I thought it was an interesting thing because in this Miami situation – the Miami situation is such an outlier that you can't use that almost. I'm not saying that one has had so many twists and turns that I'm gonna say this. I'm not sure. I feel like that's an outlier. Not to say that corruption isn't happening, but that's a Miami type corruption that it's hard to even produce other places. Like when you look at that, you're like, that's Miami. That's like basketball wise on steroids. You know, it's just that. You know what I'm saying? You can feel that was what was going down. And when you look at it, you're like, that could only happen in Miami. Like, even though I watched the U when they did the 30 and 30, I was like, yeah, you know, I knew cats in Michigan and stuff like that. But to pull off the way they did, that could only happen in Miami. Like, the same places are like locale things. Like, that could only happen in L.A. like that.
Right, LA. Right. With the USC stuff.
Yeah.
Right, with the USC stuff. It's like, you know, when you got those type of violations, it's like only in a place where there's other stuff going on can that happen. Like that wouldn't happen in Madison. Like in Madison, if we were to see, you know, Monty Ball or James White or Russell Williams riding around in different cars all the time, people gonna notice it because you see them all the time.
That's right. And they gonna stick out. You can't.
Right. Right. Exactly. They gonna stick out like a sore thumb.
That's right. In most college towns, if you look at it, with a lot of these places, most people they're more close to Madison or smaller than they are like L.A.
Right.
So that's why monitoring for compliance sticks out because, you know, Joe down at the store saying, you know, Billy Bob was down here with, you know, that's why when the shoe thing happened out there in Black Earth.
Right. Exactly.
The word going to get back real quick because people out here getting shoes and these players out here because – there ain't too many places like the place out in Black Earth, even in the
area.
That's a nice shoe place. You know, so certain things gonna get back real quick. And most college towns are more close to Madison than they are to Miami.
Uh-huh.
Like you said, where other things going on. But mostly, if you look around the SEC, and most of these things, those towns are like half the size of Madison.
Yeah.
Anything go down, you can't say you didn't know.
Yeah. But see, in them SEC towns, it's that unspoken code. Don't talk no evil, don't speak no evil, you know. And those are harder to break. I think those SEC towns are harder to get information from because it's like, everybody know what's going on, and you ain't going to get nobody to confirm nothing.
Because you're like 16, 17 miles out in the middle of nowhere behind the barn.
Right.
Who's
going
to see
right.
you there? But you got to see the light.
Right.
But
you know, everybody know the starting quarterback got a convertible. Ain't nobody gonna say nothing though.
Yeah, this is such a mess. But it'd be nice to get a panel together to kind of address. It'd be nice for us to figure out. Maybe we could talk to a few people and get one of these authors. You know, they're faculty. They'd love to come on.
Uh-huh.
Talk about. You know, their perspective on this and let them kind of toss it up. I think we'd be good. We just kind of have to figure out how we want to approach the questioning, how we want to stage and let people kind of have that space on who might want to lead on asking the questions to the panel, and we could jump in and rotate a little bit, but kind of have to coordinate a little bit, you know. But that's something we want to look at, what we can do. And then I was going to talk to both of y'all because I haven't talked to Ray in a while about it because, you know, I was trying to get a setup for that, the revenue sharing part for Block Talk Radio. And you had to enter kind of some kind of ID number. One of the things we might be able to do is we could get a federal ID number to enter there. That would be free, but it would have to be set up in terms of a partnership. So you don't have to set up an LLC or anything. We could just get a federal ID number. It's going to be a kind of a partnership set up. They ask who the general partner is going to be. You know, that any one of us can set it up. I mean, it takes like 5 minutes to 2 minutes to set up. But then we'd have a federal ID number that we could actually enter in on the revenue side. Are you there, Phil?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. So one of the things we talked about, because one of the features that you can do on Blog Talk Radio is a sharing thing on revenue on anything that they do on ads.
So you, have you seen that feature yet?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Me and you talked about it before.
Yeah, I don't know if Phil did add. So if y'all want me to explore it, I can explore that as an option. Because I think we look like we got like 6,000 hits. Now, now some of that stuff is us, but we're getting pretty good traffic. I just looked at some of the just the views and things like that. So if y'all want to, we haven't had a place where we kind of even either set up a conference or been in the same space to talk about where we want to take things as it relates to it. But it's something that we could do. So, you know, if that's something that folks are interested in, or if you wanted to have a further discussion about it, you know, let me know what your feelings are.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a feature that we can do. And if nothing else, it would take care of the monthly fee.
Right.
At worst case scenario, you know, for the show. So Phil, if you haven't had a chance to look at it, check it out, and whatever your opinion is, let me know.
Where's it at on my work? How I look at it?
It's. Do you have login information? Is it in the back office? I gotta pull this up. It's if you go. So we'll have to get you the login information. But if you go in under, I think it's under the, you may better just go to the page and you can do a search on it. I think in the back office, but if we get it, I'll send you the login information. You can log in. And I think if you just go under my account, I believe there's a tab that talks about it on the left, where you can get more about it. It kind of explains it.
Okay.
It's on the left. It's under the My Blog Talk Radio under my account. It's opt into revenue share, and. What is it the username, I think, is Real Sports Guys?
Yeah.
And then
you can just email it to me because we're still recording, right?
Yeah. I think you did. You take us off the recording?
No, we still have the hours.
Oh, I'm not gonna tell you that right now. We're about to give everybody the information, huh?
Right.
We still after hours on that. Oh, thank you for letting me know.
Hey, man. Yeah, I know, you know, sometimes I'll be working out, you know, before I was on the show listening. You know, you be in your own zone, I'll be in the after hours. I'll be like, what? Right? You got a bowl where? Okay. Like that.
Right.
And Marcus was just like, just talking and saying, yeah. He's like, this fool don't know what he's doing. I'm just here talking.
Hey, we have some Michigan, we have some rep from Michigan tonight.
Oh, I love
it. Yeah.
Yeah. She's married to one of my good friends I grew up with, man. Real good people. I actually just told him about the show. I talked to him a few days ago, and he must have logged on. They must have both been listening for part of the show, so I certainly appreciate that.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we got to bring him back to talk about the women.
Yeah, man. I know. He would have been a good person to have on for fantasy football. He messed around in our league last year. So.
Okay. Hey, don't hesitate to invite people that you know to our radio show league. You guys got the information. You know, don't hesitate to send it out to folks that you know will be active, good managers for teams, because we still got to get more teams in there. The draft is, I think, September 4th or something like that. So,
okay.
But yeah, get folks in.
Okay, I will do that. We want to make sure we even put that on our blog page.
Yeah.
Hey, Marcus, thanks for getting that the show stuff out early, man. That really helped me in terms of being prepared and thinking about stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and get it out earlier, so that we can all be more prepared. Because, like I said, man, we this week was easy because, you know, I'm listening to the radio, watching TV. Like, man, this is gonna be an easy show. You know, so if I'm seeing stuff early that I know is gonna make good talking points, I'm gonna get it out early. Even if it's just through text, just give y'all a heads up. Like, these three things, I think we can run with. So, see, I'm gonna continue to try and do that.
Yeah, what I've been trying to do is add it into the show description and putting those tags on that that Phil was talking about.
Yeah,
that'll help with people who are searching for those keywords.
I noticed that today. Another one of my friends was listening to, and he was texting me throughout the show. He's like, "Man, I'm trying to wait till y'all get to this fantasy football stuff." So yeah, I think that really helped quite a bit.
Okay. We got about, they say, look like it's like 6,000 listens.
Nice.
So yeah, this is coming together.
Yeah, let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. Keep the momentum going. Because like I said, it's only gonna get easy once football season get kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story's gonna write themselves at that point. So, you know, we got through the hard part. We got through the hard stretch of the sports season, of the sports year. You know, those summer months, especially this year, you know, no training camp for that. It's hard to navigate those months.
Yeah, no training camp and no LeBron.
Right.
It's a dry summer.
Hey, but baseball about to heat up.
Man. At least up here, man. The Brewers hanging in there, trying to, you know, be relevant.
Well, we got to do some baseball. I thought about trying to get Nick Ewalt on here, get some folks on here to beef up the baseball conversation, because that is heating up. And Phil's a big baseball guy.
Yeah.
Yep. So, one of the big debates now is, does Verlander, you know, who's been one of the more dominant, not the most dominant pitcher in the American League, should he be considered for the MVP? And I mean, I've had some really good conversations with some people over the last week, man. So I know one person for sure I have in mind that could probably come in and contribute, man, during that segment. So just let me know.
Okay. We'll have to prep that up. We need to do a little baseball talk.
Yeah.
So,
especially, and now is the time to talk it, because, you know, the races are tightening up. It's just hard to talk baseball in July. It's like, y'all got like 150 games left.
Yeah. And part of it is, you know, bringing out those stories like the Jim Tomei story and things like that. Another thing we didn't talk about that we might want to talk about is, you know, what happened with the Raiders and 49ers. I don't know if y'all talked about that.
No, we didn't get a chance to talk. We didn't get a chance to talk about that.
Yeah, you know, folks out of control in sports. We might even want to do a section on that. Out of order.
Yeah.
something that just gets to, you know, when people cross the line. That might be a little, the segment you talked about with the Chappelle, what do you call it?
Last Stepping.
That might be the segment. Lines.
Habitual Line Steppers.
You may want to get a drop for that.
I will.
We can talk about things like that. And that won't be one of them. You know, people getting beat down in the bathroom and shooting. I mean, what's going on in Oakland? We might
right.
break that down all together. That might be a segment.
Man, Oakland is wild, man. And people getting shot by the police. People getting shot at sporting events.
Yeah, you're not safe anywhere.
Yeah, Oakland's like the Wild Wild West right now, like aliens versus cowboys.
That's right, Raider Nation. How far they've fallen. Let's break it down.
Yeah. So is Terrell Pryor gonna be something?
I think so. I I mean, because for me, quarterback play, man, sucks in the NFL right now.
Uh-huh.
Once you get that first and second tier of players,
yeah.
Look out in San Francisco, man. Look out in Seattle. I mean, you got...
You don't like Alex Smith?
I saw Troy Smith play in high school, when I was in Cleveland, man. And, I'm a huge fan of him as a person, but it's like as an NFL quarterback. So, and there's 10 teams out there, man, that just have big-time questions at the quarterback position. So, I mean, think about Pryor, man. I can see him, and I hate making the comparison because they both black, they both around the same size, but I think he can be like a Vince Young type of cat. You put him with the right team, he won't make it look pretty. He won't have very sexy numbers. But that was kind of the state, that was the situation at OSU. He just found a way to win, And, I think he can be a serviceable quarterback, man. I mean, I think he's got a lot more upside. Had he went through the whole draft process, I can see him getting drafted in the first or second round, man.
Hey, Tebow did. I mean, Tebow got drafted in the first round, and I think he throws better than Tebow.
Yeah, but, Phil McGrath has probably never been pulled over either just for driving. Yeah.
Right.
Charles Barkley said, my auntie would be my uncle if she had a set of balls, I think it's different rules out there, man. It's a different set of rules sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're right. Yeah, no doubt. I think worst case scenario, he could be a decent receiver. I think best case scenario is that you get something serviceable at the quarterback position. But I think worst case scenario, if you can convince him to be a receiver, he's 6'6". He run a 4.4.
Man, I'm about to get Devon real hype. Wait for it, Devon. I'm about to get you real hype.
Okay.
I mean, why can the quarterback throw for 6,000 yards over the course of his career? Have a 2.5-1, 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, man. Win 3 straight Big Ten championships. And why can't he be considered a quarterback? I mean, Charlie Ward. Think about Charlie Ward. I'm about to get you real fired up.
I know.
To me, it's just that, reinvented. Why do we have to think about him as a receiver? Why do we have to think about him as a tight end? We didn't think about Tebow as a H-back. People were saying that, but he got picked up in the first round, man.
And I think
Tebow wasn't any more accurate, than Pryor was in college. People talk about his accuracy issues, man.
And I heard Merle Hodge saying, I've never seen people become accurate. Accuracy is all about footwork. People can be better with their footwork.
Well, Michael Vick wasn't very accurate. He wasn't very accurate in Atlanta. That was his knock. But guess what? Last year, he's king accurate. Depends on the situation, man.
Yeah, it's about footwork, mechanics. It's about if the athlete is committed to improving on the footwork and the mechanics, and this is why I say some of the changes that's happened between with the salary for rookies helps someone like a Pryor because now in public opinion and how that stuff has shifted, you're not looking to play these cash roles because you have a huge investment in them, so
right.
You can sit them and let them learn in a way that they used to learn.
Right, and it's backfiring on Tebow right now.
That's right.
Because now everybody's looking like y'all done wasted a first round pick on a cat who can't even beat out Brady Quinn for the backup job.
That's right.
Brady Quinn was destined for mediocrity, man, on draft day. I mean, I feel so bad for that kid. And I was still living in Cleveland, man. I was literally watching the game, the draft with a few friends. Cleveland's a big kind of football town, man, where people get together and watch the freaking draft. And, I just felt so bad for the cat, man. And then he finally gets picked up and he gets sent to
the Los Angeles Clippers. I mean, the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
And it's like, ouch. You know what I mean? It's like Pryor. Man, did he have to go to the Raiders?
That, yeah, man. Yeah, it's like, for a cat that's like, it's not a great situation for a cat that's trying to, you know, make something of himself. You know, he's already got a few strikes against him. Now he got to go into Crazyville and try to scrape out some sort of career. You know, when he going to have three coordinators. I mean, that's the other part about it. He's probably going to have three coordinators in 3 years. You know, just the whole situation over there isn't stable. And that's what he's going to need ultimately to be successful. He's going to need he's going to need to have time in the same system.
And that's why I used to get mad when people used to judge Cordell Stewart, because for that stretch run, he had a different coordinator almost every year. And so for a cat like that to get some continuity,
yeah,
it was tough because they kept changing coordinators and kept changing philosophies and stuff like that. So you need stability. You know, someone, they talk about Peyton Manning, but, you know, Peyton was a great quarterback. The fact of the matter is, for most of his career, he had the same offensive coordinator.
Uh-huh.
So he had continuity. He had a whole, yeah.
Ron was just talking about that, man. I just finished reading his book, man. He's been a few pages talking about how Cordell just never got the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Never got a fair shake, man.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, Tebow's paying for the previous structure because people feel like the reason why they're saying is that we invested all this money, not just a first-round pick, but all this money's invested, and we got to see if this kid can play.
Right,
I think
exactly.
This is where part of my... You know, if he's smart, got the right people around him now, because you can be a little bit more free now that he really getting paid for he getting paid and is supposed to get paid. You know, now he can get the right people around him. The problem he's got is, like you always talk about, is that Raider Nation has not been stable. So that's what's going to kill him. That's the last thing he needs to be. You know, the coaches they have out there are good coaches, but it's how long they're going to allow themselves to be able to do what they need to do.
Right, before Al get fed up and start wanting to ask people, you know, fire people.
Because they're not going the vertical route on every play.
I mean, you wouldn't have an alcoholic man be a bartender. I mean, that's just not a real good mix.
Right.
I mean, it can work, but, I mean, some would say you're setting yourself up for disaster.
Right.
You know, but... I mean, I can just see Drew Rosenhaus selling it. You know, Terrell, we can make this work.
Right, try to sell him on it. And actually, I think that's a good move, having Drew Rosenhaus be there. He has a veteran agent. He has an agent who's handled clients who've had image issues before, you know what I'm saying? And he knows how to help him get in a position where he can be successful. He also probably has a little bit more weight as far as helping him figure out who needs to be around him, who needs to be in his circle. You know, he hasn't been a part of his circle, so he's not a crony, you know, a yes man type cat, you know, and I think that's gonna help him out also. I think that's gonna help Pryor as well, having Rosenhaus in there, because Rosenhaus is pretty savvy. I think Rosenhaus will do a good job of putting him in situations where, you know, he's making the right moves, making the right decisions. He's at least got him saying the right thing.
You know what was funny? During Terrell Pryor's pro day, man, you know, they showed, a 30-second clip over and over on ESPN all day. And, man, you see who was hiking them balls? Drew Rosenhaus was out on the field hiking them balls during his pro ball, like during his pro day, man.
That's true,
like,
man.
Are you serious? Rosenhaus was on one knee. You know,
right.
Like the offensive line. I'm like, what? I'm like, man, this is too much.
That right there is going to get Drew 4 or 5 more clients.
Right.
That's right.
Because clients are like, he down here snapping. He going to do whatever it takes for his play. You know what he's doing. You know, Terrell may never be anything, but that number one pick, for the next 3 or 4 years, might be one of his clients. Yeah. I was like, you know, did you see me on my knee with Terrell? When he was down there, I was down there snapping at the worst. I stood by his side.
Right.
You know, that's going to get you 6, 7, 8 more top clients.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I take out the trash. I do what it takes to get you what you're going to get.
We get it
done. I was surprised that the Steelers went and took a look at him. You know, he's a home state guy over there, but,
yeah,
you know, that might have been an interesting situation for him. Cause he
I'm surprised a lot of established teams didn't take a look at him. I mean, look, if you got a quarterback who you feel like you got for the next 5 years, look at the dude. I mean, give him a shot. Take a look at him. I mean,
and that's why,
worst case.
That's why. I mean, I think that's why it puts this whole idea of can you teach someone how to play quarterback is something that they used to do all the time.
Right.
Right? They used to do. I mean, not all these cats, you know, Montana and them ran the option in college.
That's right.
You know, they didn't just totally throw. And, you know, now he, you know, he's considered one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So the process of how you develop a quarterback, can he go through that process? And, you know, right now they're not losing anything. On they got $500,000 invested in them?
Right. Yeah.
If you're going to take a chance, you know, you may as well take a chance with over $500,000. And they got none of their quarterbacks signed for next year.
Right.
You know, I think you go and you know, get a couple of those quarterbacks signed and keep him and just look like, you know, I want to see.
You groom him.
Yeah, you groom him. I said, look, he's going to basically sit and learn for 2 years.
Right.
Man, I'm so glad he got away from Ohio, man. There was some talk about the Bengals looking at him. I mean, not just because it's the Bengals, but being in Ohio, man, it's just like, you know, I mean, people are Ohio State, just like they probably are about the Badgers, man, at Madison.
Yep.
The whole state of Ohio, man, they are wacky about the Buckeyes.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the major metropolitan areas in the state, man, like Cincinnati, Columbus, Toledo, Cleveland, man, where there's a lot of alum around. I mean, I'm so glad he got away from Ohio. I'm so glad.
Yeah, they ever crucified him.
You know?
Yeah, it was good that he got – being out west, I'm not quite sure, given everything that's going on in Oakland, the Bay Area, you know, is the best. But, you know, he can hang out with Digital Underground.
I swear he get 10 points if I ever saw him hanging out with Shock G. He gets 10 points on the spot.
They hate him in Ohio, man. They hate him on Ohio. I mean, gee, think about it. You grew up in Ann Arbor, man. Think about if people blame one person, one student athlete, for getting Bo Schembechler fired in the 80s. Just imagine.
I know.
Now, Bo obviously, you know, Bo retired. He stepped away. But just imagine. Just imagine if a player was blamed for getting Woody Hayes fired. Now, we know, you know, he knocked out somebody, you know, a player on the field. But, man, people are blaming Terrell Pryor for Trussell being gone. And, man, Trussell is a god in Ohio, man, just not because Ohio State. I mean, man, Trussell's dad coached 20 years in the Cleveland area at Baldwin Wallace, a D3 program. And, you know, he was at Youngstown State for a while. I mean, man, it is nasty in Ohio concerning Brian.
Oh, really?
Oh, I mean, it is, in my opinion, it's just as, if not worse, than the LeBron situation.
Wow.
You know, it just doesn't have the national heat, man. Man, I talked to some of my friends that are still in Ohio, and they like, man, Terrell Pryor, I mean, you know, they're like, there was rumors he needed security. You know, he was still in Ohio, man. I mean, that's part of the reason why he moved back to the PA area. I mean, it was just nasty, man. Joker.
Wow.
Threats. I mean, you know, we don't hear about that. Now, Tim Tebow, you know, I mean, don't get me started, but.
Don't get him going.
Yeah, don't get me going.
Bad contact.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, you know, I hope the young man gets an opportunity. Yeah, you know, sometimes you hear him talk, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah, it's like a box of chocolates. That's what I mean, thinking. I'm like, damn. I know you've been all over the world, but a box of chocolates.
Right.
It's difficult how we do it. Yeah, it's so many lies. And not that these young folks are having that bit, but so many lives have been just crushed over the last 20 years with the proliferation of college sports.
Yeah.
You know, you know, and it's just, it's you know, we're still trying to, you know, it's good because, you know, we're beginning to look at, and hopefully I have some chances over the next couple of years to be involved in some research projects around this, but particularly looking at the role, you know, what's happening, you know, with black athletes in college sports is going to be some emerging stuff coming out in the next 3 or 4 years around it. But that'll be a good project to kind of get to at the heart of this stuff. And so, yeah, I'm interested in kind of, you know, where this is going to go because, you know, cash can't come back from some of this stuff. That's the give and take. The money right now is good, but some of these cats, because all these cats are not making it. And part of you continuing this is being part of that brand and that network. But when you get ostracized like this, you don't even have access to that. So let's say Pryor doesn't, you know what's happened with all these cats in terms of bankruptcy and things like that. So let's say Pryor just bombs, which is the probability is pretty high at this point if you think about it. He can't even tap into that Ohio State network.
Right. He's been cut off.
He cut off. And so,
I mean, that's one of the reasons I always told my brother it was good that he, you know, when he decided he was going to go to Wisconsin, I was like, look, think about it like this. If best case scenario is you have a career and you go on and you play pro, whether it's overseas or in the NBA, worst case scenario is you come back, you live in town, and you can get a job at a lot of places with a lot of alumni because your name is going to mean something.
That's right.
You know, you got that in into that connection into that UW alumni network, and there's going to be tons of opportunities that are going to be given to you because just simply because you play ball at the UW. So people are going to look to give you opportunities, look to help you out, look to, you know, tap you into different avenues or clue you in on different channels or ways to get involved in things.
And if you play internationally, there are going to be Badger fans who are local there who will come and see you play because you were a Badger.
Mm-hmm.
You play in Israel, there are Badger alumni in Israel. The local alumni station of Israel, of Badger, whatever is going to be at your game.
Right.
The thing about Pryor, man, you know, I mean, Pryor, people forget, man, this dude was a top recruit in the country.
In the country.
And
yeah.
He was a top 25 basketball recruit.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I've heard you guys talk about it in the past. I mean, man, this kid has been a heralded athlete since he was in middle school. And so, you know, kids in those situations, and, man, unless they have a very, very, very strong, you know, family support and network around them, man, it's easy for those kids not to develop the average social skills, reasoning skills, and just life skills that kids have at the age of 21 because everybody's tripping over trying to help them, giving them privileges.
Right.
So, I mean, at this point, this kid's 21, 22 years old. This is probably the first time in his life, well, I'm sure of it, that he's ever faced this type of scrutiny. And this is scrutiny that most people in the world never face.
Right.
You know, less than one quarter of one half of 1% of people face this kind of scrutiny ever in their life. And so, man, you know, for me, you know, I think about that Marcus Dupree 30 for 30 special.
Yeah.
You know, did you guys see that about Marcus Dupree, the great running back
in
Oklahoma? I mean, my man is driving a truck right now, or he's got his truck coming, whatever it is, but it's obvious, you know, and I see a lot of parallels between him and Pryor, man. You know, 20, 30 years from now, we can be talking about, remember Terrell Pryor. Remember Michigan and Ohio State fighting over this guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, to me, it's
called Rodriguez's job. It cost Rodriguez his job. He put his entire future on getting Pryor. Everybody thought he was going to Michigan at one point, and then it just shifted at the, that's how big it was. You know, for him. So you're right. I mean, everybody was getting after him. Everybody was saying, Devon, you got to see this Pryor kid. And I'm thinking, let me see what this. Yeah, I mean, he was. What if he would have gone basketball?
Yeah, he was thinking about Pitt. He was getting recruited by Pitt. Pitt was the hottest team that was after him in basketball. And then he'd play quarterback for the Panthers for the football team.
And even now, most coaches, if you were to tell them, listen. Terrell Pryor, you get him, you're going to win 3 SEC championships, 3 Big Ten, 3 Pac-10, whatever it is, you're going to win 3 championships. You know, it's going to end ugly, but you're going to win 3 straight championships. Will you take
it? That's what I'm saying. What's the incentive for not? You know what I'm saying? Most coaches are going to say, I'll take you.
Yeah.
I'll take you. Most coaches are going to say, I'll take you. You know, what's the incentive? What's the other option?
Right.
You say you're going to exit stage left, huh?
Right.
I'll exit stage left to the NFL. Yes, I will.
We saw this. We might have a 3-week series. We have to think about this to really get deep on this thing. Get some guests on it. I got my list forming in my head, but I'm thinking we can really get in on some of these, because these are some emerging issues, and it creates a real interesting. We could pose some questions that really are going to be more dilemmas for folks, you know, because. You know, we see the backdrop, man, and it'd be nice to get some folks chewing on this.
Uh-huh.
Because, I think we could get some folks on the show to talk about it because it's such an interesting thing. So I was just trying to think about, you know, I'm trying to figure out how we might get Casey Johnson, who's a Bloyd alum who writes for the Tribune, you know, who's a sports guy, you know, see if we could get someone like that to come on and talk about, you know, with this. But, you know, it'd be nice to figure out how we might organize that ahead of time.
Because
uh-huh. I think this one is, I think everybody is trying to, has a way to solve this. And I just love to hear what other people are talking about. Because at a certain point, it's what, what was her name that was on from Detroit? At a certain point, there's a point of diminishing returns. How much is enough? And then it's going to come back to still a moral decision.
Yeah.
Right. You know, what is the Jerry Gustafson, our old esteemed economics professor, Boyd Collins, said, what's the point of diminishing returns? Phil, that is a, you know, I know you looked at the microeconomics. So what's the point of diminishing returns? We have to identify what that point is, and then it becomes about something else.
Right, because at some point you're making enough money to survive better than most college students do.
Right,
that's right. So then, what is this about?
About the lifestyle, man.
So it's about that delayed gratification.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's an issue we deal with all undergraduates, all young people, right? This gets amplified. But, you know, Marcus and I have done these advising sessions and working with young and undergraduates, right? Marcus, you know.
Right.
This whole concept of delayed gratification is kind of elevated with athletes, but it exists with a lot of young people at that age that we're dealing with. Because of
and with athletes it's worse, because the nature of what they do is instant gratification. Like, I make a bucket, I get 2 points.
That's right.
You know, I run for 3 yards, I got 3 yards.
That's right.
What do you mean? I gotta wait.
Yep.
Right.
I tackle for a loss, I'm gonna get a reaction from folks.
Right.
On it.
So it's always immediate, you know, and so for athletes especially, that's a harder paradigm shift.
So part of what I need to kind of think through myself, even working with young athletes, is this whole conversation. You know, because I'm going to be presenting in, you know, next week and just talking to the entering class of athletes. And, you know, one of the things I talk to them, I often talk to the committed athletes, especially football players. I do the Shaq story. And actually, we might end up bringing Shaq in. But this whole idea of why is it important for him to be working on a doctorate? Like, why is that important for a guy who's already a millionaire,
right,
several times over? Like, what's important about that? And how are you thinking about who you are by what he's doing? You know, just that whole shift in thinking.
about it. And I think that, I think there's some pieces here that have to be a part of that for young people, particularly mostly who are, you know, in these conversations, a lot of times athletes of color who we are cultivating, who have to continue to make some things happen in communities.
Uh-huh.
And how are we developing these young people in the context of this? That's something that we have to figure out how to get back, because there's always going to be temptation. And we've all fought it, right? And so what is it that keeps us focused and grounded in it?
Uh-huh.
I didn't think that – and it's a tough issue to get at, because I'm hearing a lot of stuff we're talking about. But ultimately, there is a point where that part has to click in. Ultimately, they might come up with a solution that addresses 80% of what we're talking about, and that most of us will feel like, yeah, they're closer to fixing this. But it's not going to change some of those other issues we talk about. We still got to deal with those. And there's always going to be cats hanging around who are groupies, both guys and girls, around athletes.
Uh-huh.
It's just the nature of what it is. Everybody wants to be around a popular person. That doesn't change from high school. Right? Everybody wants to say, I know that person. Right? You know, I got people on my Facebook. Pac Hill Bang, who used to be on Mad TV. He's a Blood alum. You know, big time guy. He's on my Facebook. But I'm not saying I know Pac Hill Bang. I know him. But everybody wants to know somebody, right? Everybody wants to be around, and what they're going to do. So how do you manage that? And so this is something that's going to have to be, we got to dig into it, because some of it has to get into some other stuff.
Yeah. Well, it all gets into some other stuff, man. I mean,
yeah.
The whole nature of our cultural setup is,
yeah.
It allows for this to happen. It's always allowed for it to happen. But now I think even more so, you have a generation that is really programmed for instant gratification. And for if I can get it now, and this whole, I mean, our whole society is, you know, it's not so necessarily what's right and wrong, it's what's right and what I can't get caught for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And part of it is also, and this is really going deep, if we really want to unpack this, is because a lot of times we are talking about kids who are coming from poor communities. But in some of these communities, the impact of the family structure that
uh-huh.
was part of breaking it down and a lot of stuff that happened in the 80s, that impacted a lot of these communities that took away family structures in a way that reinforced some of these ideas that
uh-huh.
haven't existed for almost 20 years, that people have been trying to rebuild, reconstruct, where you got generations that aren't that far apart. Like there's, you know, 10 years, it's 20 years that represent three generations,
right?
Of where that stuff is happening, and where the role of the father and the male figure in that process. How many times do you hear some of these athletes describing their coach as their father figure,
yeah.
as their dad, and even some of these boosters who's playing a father figure? Even when you talk, Weber talked about, and Weber had a two-person home. So let's think about that. But if you when you and you hear Jalen and them talk about their situation, and they talk about the gentleman that was involved
Ed
in all that stuff with them, yeah,
Ed Martin
and Martin, you know, and described him as almost like a father figure, as a person who provided resources in a place where there weren't resources. So that's where it all begins, right? And so it's all that is in the all that is in the is part of that context. I mean that's you know, when we start to layer this off, because at a certain point they're going to preserve the game, it's a golden goose. At a point right now, the egg to the golden goose has got a crack in it. And the thing that gets people the chances when that money is in jeopardy, or when that stuff is in jeopardy, some major decisions are going to happen. That's why this new president is here, they're gonna find some solutions. Believe me, the rubber has met the road.
See, man, there's a model out there that works. You know, I mean, I was talking to one of my boys about this, and you know, my nephew that you know you guys sent a shout out a few months ago, my oldest one, man, you know, he was an all-state football player in Maryland, won a national championship in discus. You know, now he's a freshman at Yale playing football. And, you know, he just got there last week, and I just talked to him a couple of days ago. And, man, the Ivy League, they kind of have a unique situation where, you know, they're in that Division One subdivision, the old 1AA type of system. But, man, their players, I mean, it's just a totally different situation. I mean, it's kind of like at Beloit where classes and everything else, that comes first. And there's a spirit amongst the coaches, the whole athletic department, that, hey, if you got a test, you got that, you take care of that. Now, at the same time, those coaches are probably under a lot less pressure in terms of performance bonuses and keeping their job if they have a losing season every so often. You know, but at the same time, man, I mean, most freshmen in the Ivy League don't play their freshman year of football. Like, they play either on a JV team or they just don't play. You know, so, I mean, it kind of goes back to that whole Alan Sack book, you know, where it's just a different expectation and there's more of an emphasis on academics. Now, can you do that at Ohio State? Probably not. You know, but at the same time, there's a model there that works.
Well, I was going to suggest, I think you hit on that about the freshman not playing. You could do that in college football.
Yep. You could, but I can see an antitrust suit coming up. You know? I mean, think about it. You don't like
freshman
play. You might be taking, you know, their livelihood away 3 or 4 years down the road.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's just such a different culture and different world today, man. You know, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, it's mad different. I think college sports just needs – I think you hit it on the head, man. When you talked about the amateurism and that myth of amateurism, they need to move beyond that, man. It's not 1950, it's not 1960, it ain't even 1970. It's 2011, and is that still relevant, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like baseball. This whole baseball purist thing drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, get over it. It's 2011. Deal with it. You know, I mean, that's what I want to say to NCAA. It's like, guess what? Stop complaining about the problem unless you want to let go of some of these, you know, like, if you want to be a zealot and hold on to these firm, deep-rooted beliefs about your childhood or how it was with Red Grangers at Army. I mean, man, it ain't like that no more.
It's right.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to have to wrap it all up.
But, all right then, man.
It's been good. I certainly enjoy this every Tuesday night. Y'all make my week.
I agree, man. I look forward to it, man. It's a good part of my week as well.
And I'm going to try and work on that guest speaker, or that guest, you know. We're going to work on something like that. So I'll keep y'all posted on that.
All right.
Where is Sack at? Is he at Penn State?
I believe he's at Penn State. Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to work that angle, I can work another angle.
Okay. Well, all right then, fellas, I got to get going.
Okay.
All right, take care.
All right, man, peace.
All right, bye.